I'd invite you to stand with me as I offer our invocation. Please remain standing after for our Pledge of Allegiance to our flag, if you'd pray with me. Our God, we pause a moment and ask for your continued blessing upon our city and our country, for those who serve us daily in harm's way. We pray a special peace as well as a special blessing upon their safety. For the freedoms that we enjoy for living in this great place, may we never take them for granted, but realize there have been many who have literally given their lives that we may be free. For the meetings and the deliberations that we will have today, we pray for wisdom. For those that are in need in our community, we pray that either through our actions or through the actions of our citizens, that their needs may be met. Thank you for being a God that is present and has blessed us with so much. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Mr. Knight, any changes to the agenda as presented?
No, sir.
Commissioners, will the commission on this? Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. I just wanted to comment under my mayor's report that several of us had the opportunity of flipping the switch on our new solar panel, I guess you'd call it. Very, very nice project. Very, very fun project to see. And I know while it may just meet a minor amount of our current power needs, it does kick us into a new phase. We are now actually creating some of our own power in our utility, albeit a small amount. But a great green initiative, and one that I enjoyed being part of. That concludes my mayor's report. I'll go to the city manager's report if there's anything that questions or the city manager would like to comment on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One, a couple of things. The economic development or economic update at the chamber is coming up on March 6th. The city does have a table. If any of the commissioners want to join us, let me know, and we'll make sure you get one of those seats. I wanted to give you an update on the Lee Road extension discussions. As you know, there's a developer that's looking to develop the property on the north, on the east side of 1792 across from Lee Road, that has given the city a traffic study on the possibility of extending Lee Road. I sent something out to you last week in case you haven't had a chance to look at it. This goes back to a project back in 2002-2003, in which case the preliminary development and environmental report was done. You hear it called a PD&E. That was done back in 2003, and the concept of Lee Road extension was approved, or I should say it was approved in concept by the commission on September 22nd, 2003. So this is a 10 and a half year ago discussion that took place at the commission level. The project is currently the number 10 project on the Metro Plan Orlando list of projects, which is scheduled to be funded somewhere around 2018. But as a result of this developer wanting access at that traffic light at Lee Road, the developer's been asked by DOT to forward fund that project and punch that road through now as part of this development, or else they're saying he won't get his access at that traffic light. So that project has not yet been turned into staff to go through the P&Z process, but he has turned in a traffic study, which we have now given to our traffic consultant to review and advise the city, give it an independent look on the city's behalf to let us know, you know, is it accurate, and what are some of the impacts further away from the core of that development. So that, we're told that that's about 2 weeks away from being completed. We should have that by the end of next week, is my understanding. So, and at that time, it'll come back to the commission for discussion.
Randy, the purpose of the Lee Road thing in the first place is to, I mean, irregardless of whether there's a development there or not.
There was part of that PD&E study. They were looking at the 1792 corridor and how to help traffic flow better along the 1792 corridor. And one of their big backlogs is that little short section between Lee Road and Webster. So their study showed them that pushing that road through would help that awkward turn you take when you turn right off of Lee Road and then have to turn left onto Webster when you're going, trying to head east. and that causes this backlog in that area. So that's what they're trying to fix.
And has it gotten any better since 2003?
Nothing.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Nothing's really changed as far as the design of the street. So they looked at a lot of options, widening the road, which, of course, we were opposed to. They wanted to close the traffic, get rid of the traffic light at Webster was one of their other solutions, and the city was opposed to that. At the time, the Lee Road extension was the lesser of the evils of what of the options that were considered at that time.
So we'll be looking at that. Commissioner, I'll get to you in a moment.
Yeah, it'll be coming to you once we have the study in hand and have a chance to look at it at staff level.
Okay. Commissioner Cooper?
Did we make the decision then that we're going to look at the Lee Road cut through as a commission separate from the project?
I would say it probably come to you separate from the project. The project, like I say, hasn't even been turned into us yet, so we don't even know when it's going to P&Z at this point. It's already missed the May cycle, Jeff, or? All right, so it missed,
and the Lee Road extension has nothing to do with this. I mean, it's on a work plan for FDOT today, am I correct?
It is on the, right.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And my understanding is that there are a lot of assumptions that were made as part of that 2008. Actually assumed that we would have no significant growth in development. And so a lot of things have changed.
Sure.
So I'm really excited that we're going to have an opportunity to look at it, because at that point in time, what the traffic study showed was that, yes, indeed, cut through traffic down Webster and Palmer was a legitimate concern. And certainly if it was a legitimate concern then, it's going to be a legitimate concern now. And the resolution that they recommended was speed bumps and traffic mitigation. So I just think that's an important thing for us to talk about, and I'm glad we're going to have the opportunity to review that decision.
Well, I think a lot of traffic in Winter Park is cut through traffic. So whether it's down Palmer or whether it's down Aloma or wherever, I think a lot of it is people going through our city. So.
Sure. That concludes my report.
Questions of city manager about other matters?
None, sir.
Okay, we'll move on. Questions of the city attorney, unless there's any comments from him?
No, sir.
Questions of the city attorney?
No. I do have a question. Given that it was a resolution and it was signed in 2002 and it was never actually given a resolution number or codified, do we have any legal obligation if this commission were to decide that maybe that wasn't the best idea? Would we?
If the minutes of the meeting were that.
I'm not sure what the topic is.
I think we're going back to the PD&E.
Forgive me.
Yeah, I'm just trying
start
to
start on a resolution from 2002. I don't know what.
And Commissioner, make sure that indeed we're on the same page here. You're asking me about the action that was or was not taken by a prior commission back in the early 2000s. You know, the minutes are going to reflect that it was an official action or not. And if it was official action, it's not just because there's not a number that's attached. That's a Scrivener's error or a clerical mistake. It's not.
But are we allowed by law to reconsider if circumstances have significantly changed since then?
I think that's going to be more of an issue. Remember, now this is a state road, so they've already spent a lot of money for the PD&E, hundreds of thousands of dollars, I would imagine, and it's their project. My understanding of how the process works, and I'll defer to the city managers, is that with the other cities that I work with, the state wants to cooperate with the local jurisdiction and make sure that their project doesn't, or as best as possible, meets the needs of that local jurisdiction. So I would imagine while we aren't going to, very bluntly, we're not going to have the veto power, but we're going to be able to have input.
Influence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That has been my experience.
Sure. And we have influence over our streets that we control today, so right. We can certainly...
That seems very encouraging.
Put up barricades, do all kind of things we can do. So. Or make a toll road if you want. Palmer toll, I don't know. Aloma toll, I don't know. Pay enough, right? Other questions? Questions of the city attorney moved on. Hearing none, I'll pick up citizen comments near the 8 o'clock, the 5 o'clock hour. Consent agenda. Will the commission on the consent agenda?
I move for approval.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any citizens wishing to speak to us about the consent agenda? Seeing none, I'll close the floor for the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I was an aye. Opposed? Thank you. We're going to item 10A, approval of a ULI Technical Assistance Panel scope and funding for U.S. 1792 corridor.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon. The Economic Development Advisory Board has listened to you. I thank you again from EDAB to coming out of the fall and visiting with us. One of the issues that came up in each of our conversations was the corridors and the ability to rate these corridors and look at these corridors with the standpoint of redevelopment opportunities. 1792 really, Orlando Avenue, 1792 really floated to the top. The EDAB recommended that we approach our local Central Florida chapter of ULI to ask for a technical assistance panel similar to the Fairbanks project, and we did that. The scope that you have is putting that panel in place. The fee would be $25,000. We have that in the economic development line item budget for planning and community development, and we wanted to tell you all what we were doing. We expect to have this moving forward by April. We will be engaging the stakeholders and the property owners along that corridor. And really what we're looking for is understanding Winter Park's uniqueness, but knowing that a lot of other communities our size have faced the challenges of looking at redevelopment along commercial corridors that are similar as 1792 and what they've done to ensure that the quality of their community is substantially kept the same. We would like to take the recommendations from CAPS and come back to you and ask you for your thoughts and considerations to be adopted, if you so choose, in the comprehensive plan or through some other means. So it's really staff's game plan at this point in time, and we're asking for approval.
Questions?
One, Mr. Mayor. Dory, I know that the discussion about a potential minor league baseball stadium is on the agenda tonight, and should the commission decide to go ahead with that, three of the four potential sites are falling within what I would consider pretty much to be the 1792 corridor. Now, certainly the baseball stadium has a lot of financial aspects to it that are involving different partners and whatnot, but there's a physical aspect to it as well. If we were to go ahead with the ball stadium study tonight, would sites be included in the TAP study? I mean, it's...
They certainly could be.
I mean, again, I'm trying to separate the financial partnership dealings between different parties that are certainly a major aspect of the stadium discussion, but there's also, as we've heard, transportation. There's all kinds of issues involved with that as well. Is that something that they could potentially be looking at as well as part of the TAP study, or are the two so separated that would muddy the waters?
Well, I think the TAP study is really going to look at the density and intensity along 1792 as well as the development potential along 1792. So certainly a baseball stadium would fall within that development potential. We certainly could play out those scenarios. I don't know how many other communities around Florida have dealt with a baseball stadium on that type of an arterial, but it's something that we could look at as we're looking around for others that we talk to as to what they've maybe had to deal with as far as redevelopment of sites like that. I can't say I wouldn't ever take it out of the horizon of things that we could ask the panel about.
Okay.
Well, 1792 strikes me as it's things are happening.
Yes.
And it's happening, what I would suggest, organically, which is not necessarily a bad way for it to happen. But there could be better things, or we don't even know if we're getting our best right now from what's happening upon it. Plus, I mean, we do know there's other large sites and tracks along the road that are available and seem to be in flux, at least based on what you hear and read. So, I mean, I'm fully supportive of doing this. I think the more we can study, the more we can get ahead of what's happening on 1792, the better, personally.
The only thing with doing a study is I want to make sure it's not a shelf study. So
right.
We want to make sure that we bring back those recommendations to you as part of the second. It's staff's intent to bring back those recommendations as part of our second large-scale cycle that we're doing for the planning department and decide whether any of what came out of that needs to be incorporated into the comprehensive plan specifically for 1792. So it's our intent to be able to use this as a springboard to bringing you back some options and policies that we'd be looking for.
Dory, is denning part of this one, or would denning be its own thing? Or
denning
or,
could. Denning I mean, has.
Could we go from 25 and make it a three-day one and include denning? I don't know. We've talked about denning as much as we talked about 1792, and they seem to be related, whether or not they're sister roads or not. They're certainly related.
Shelley Lawton's here from ULI tonight, and I'm sure that if you all chose
to... I don't know. I mean, is just that ask too big of a scope change,
no,
potentially?
So.
Or and I don't know what the will of the commission would be on.
You are looking at two different types of roads.
They are two
you're
different types
at an
of roads.
Arterial collect, you're
yeah.
looking at a major arterial, and
Federal
you're
highway.
Looking at a minor collector, which is
right.
a city road on Denning. So you're really looking at two different roads that... It's a little tough for that connection, but it is easy to see where that corridor.
Well, I'm just intrigued by the fact that what we may suggest on 1792 could impact Denning, and what we may suggest on Denning could certainly impact what we do on 1792. So, minimally, if this approves and goes forward, I would want the ULI to consider that Denning corridor. Whether they have any recommendations or not, I certainly wouldn't want to ask them to do that, but. But probably aren't that many. I mean, I don't know. There may be other great roads in America that are federal roads that also have some great city roads paralleling it.
Yeah.
Commissioner Cooper.
The thing that I keep struggling with and coming back to is as I read through the information, and by the way, I'm very excited to have TAP take a look at 1792. My issue was one of timing relative to the baseball stadium, because I do think that location is going to make a difference in what they say to you, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But even more importantly to me was, like, if you go and look on page, they don't have page numbers on this, I guess it's page 25 of the packet, and what it says there is that the panelists will analyze which aspects of the study area elevate Winter Park's brand and which aspects actually detract from the city's vision and brand. And it says that in a number of places, that the things they're going to recommend are going to be measured against our vision. And that keeps taking me back to the fact that the last two consultants we have hired, the first one when we did the economic development plan in 2011, said the city of Winter Park does not have a consensus on growth. Last year, when we brought in Sylvia from WRT to do her evaluation of economic development here, she said one of the major issues that we have is that we do not have a community vision. And we know that she went to a lot of effort to say, please get together and have an open community vision. Not because we're all going to agree, but because we'll come to a consensus. So my concern about continuing to pay people to come in and make recommendations that are measured against the city's vision is that we have not given our residents an opportunity to participate in a visioning, nor have we as a group sat down and openly discussed our personal visions. So I just keep coming back to, I think it's a great idea. I just think that we need to get the horse in front of this cart that says this is our community vision, because if the first thing on their recommendation list is to tell us densities, recommended densities and intensities along 1792, well, that goes back to one of the threats that they identified in the economic development plan that said the city of Winter Park does not have a consensus on growth. So I would love if we as a commission and as a community could go through the visioning exercise that we are receiving letters from our citizens about. I think this week we got something from Jeffrey Blydenberg, Deirdre Mann. These are people that know how government works. I really think we are doing our citizens a disjustice and ourselves a disjustice if we don't sit down and talk about how we will grow. And so that's my biggie is, I think it's a great idea. I just think we need to know where the baseball stadium's going first, and I would like us to have a consensus on growth and vision. That's all. And I know that's not your, that's our issue up here, so I'm appealing to my fellow commissioners.
I don't know that it's a widespread conviction, Commissioner. I know you have that as a widespread conviction. And I think actually, if I recall, the statement from last summer was, and the city has a much closer, it's much closer to a vision than anybody's ever thought it is. So, I mean, I'm certainly willing to listen if there's three who want to put that process on the table. We've done that twice now, and there's not
been
there's not a consensus of this commission to go forward. So if you want to raise that on this matter, I'm certainly all ears.
Well, I just
but
think
we
it's
can
important.
Vote it up or vote it down.
If they're going to be coming back and telling us which elements detract from the city's vision, then we either have to assume that our existing comprehensive plan recommends our vision, or we need to sit down and talk about what a consensus on a vision is.
Well, it is our economic, I mean, it is our plan today, so I would...
Our current comprehensive plan.
I would argue it might not be something I agree with, but I would say that is our vision.
And that's the reason
we... But I don't know that you want my vision on this matter, frankly.
I think we need to separate the two, though, also.
Yeah, I don't know that you want Carolyn Cooper's vision, or Sarah Sprinkles, or Steve Leary's, or Tom McMahon.
And our vision.
Well, but let's be clear. You know, again, I keep going back to this, every time we discuss this. This city has a vision.
It's
not
Milquetoast,
Commissioner. I'm sorry you feel that way, but it's on our city website. And it is to be the best place to live, work, and play for today's residents and future generations. Right. It is very clear what the vision is. And how that gets disseminated is going to the ULI TAPS panels are helping us to define exactly what that means. Dory, to Commissioner McMackin's points, because I agree with him in regards to baseball and how they're going to impact it, as well as the mayor's. They also feed into the first TAPS panel that we had on Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. So I think Denning and 1792 are really critical as we look at that. And also to the point that was brought up earlier in regards to not shelving it, because I know you don't want to shelve it more than or less than anybody up here. Can you just briefly fill us in on where Fairbanks is so that when people say to us, why are you going to spend more on another TAPS panel? We're not even sure we got deliverables from the first. And I know we have deliverables from the first, but there were next steps after that one, and it's just been a bit since we've spoken on those. So can you just...
Well, going back to the Denning 1792, when we did West Fairbanks, we did look at a number of major roads that were off of West Fairbanks. We looked at the streets that were running in and around that corridor. We didn't just draw a line. We really kind of drew the line all the way from Minnesota up to Carolina and kind of around the I-4 intersection and all the way to 1792. So it was comprehensive, and I do think that the TAPS panel for 1792 would be equally as comprehensive looking at what's on the east side. With that said, where we left off with West Fairbanks and kind of going back, the West Fairbanks TAPS panel at the time we started, we hadn't begun construction of our sewer system. And a lot of the West Fairbanks TAPS panel mission was to build some trust with that community out there. And We've done everything that we can as staff to reach out and try to build a more trusting relationship between the city and property owners and merchants and certainly the effort that Public Works and DOT and utilities had in putting in our utilities helped with that as well. We did a lot of one-on-one. You know, we had staff dedicated to being out there. Since then, last fall, we did have a visioning session. Merrill and Crotty and UCF came out and did that for us. And we invited almost 55 people to that visioning session, significant property owners, interested residents, interested tenants. And they came out and spent a day with us, and we went through a very preliminary visioning exercise and came out with some really good answers. I followed up with that in November with another meeting with them of a smaller strategic core group. Unfortunately, I have not heard back from that core group, but it was at that point in time they were very interested in taking the lead on developing a vision, taking the lead on developing the branding. So it is my intent. I wanted to give them a little time to noodle over some of that and see where they came up with, but it is our intent to go forward. One of the interesting things that staff has looked at with regard to the West Fairbanks project is looking at potentially annexing some of the area to the south to try to get some larger areas along to Minnesota where you could really start to see some significant land acquisition to be able to start redevelopment to occur. That's something we need to come back with you on, and once we get through the large-scale comp plan process we're in right now, we'll probably bring that back after we vet it through a few of our P&Z and our EDAB. But the thought of possibly going out and looking at some additional land base out there that we could extend our water, you know, have those sewer clients that they already there, and then offer some development potential. That's really kind of where we are with Fairbanks. So I would say the TAPS panel was very successful. It gave us a very clear path, and you were able to come back I feel and get more of a feeling for what was actually out there and begin to start discussions on some things that we were looking at, you know, unified stormwater ponds and things like that.
Well, because here, to Commissioner Cooper's point, too, and if I'm very comfortable with our vision, I think we're heading in the right direction, but I do think these TAPS panels will help really help us get a grasp on what we're looking for future development, too. I mean, they will fill that side of the equation that Commissioner Cooper seems to be worried about in regards to density. All those things will be addressed on that main corridor. So those things all start to add up nicely. I just want to make sure that they're all in sync and they're all, you know, you're considering they don't get shelved and they don't get left behind.
We see the West Fairbanks potentially having some comprehensive planning policies associated with it. I think 1792 is probably much more current with that, based on large acquisitions of property, the potential that the largest development pools that we have are out on 1792. It's kind of calling us to do something sooner than later. 1792 is our sooner than later corridor, and we certainly want you all to be able to look at it from a policy standpoint.
Thank you.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Is it possible, because I feel a little bit like we have a lot of patchwork pieces that we're putting together in this great big quilt, and you have that picture of that quilt. Most of us have that picture of that quilt because we get to live and sleep with it and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not sure that everybody knows that we know all of this. What's the way that we can provide that kind of information so people understand that we know what happened to Fairbanks? We had hundreds of people who came out and were very interested in that, and they were heard, and they were, what they wanted is what we did. Mm-hmm. And so that's really important. It was a big part of that process. I expect some of the same things are going to happen with the 1792 group. So how can we help to show people that we know these different pieces are going on? Because I think we're doing it, but I don't think people know we are.
We actually, Jeff and I had that conversation. It's really timely that we take the West Fairbanks efforts and maybe wrap it up into an executive summary that the community knows. And we've got a draft that we're still trying to put some meat on those bones to get it wrapped up. And I think once we do that, then it gets posted online. People will see, here's where we're at. And I also want to use it to encourage my West Fairbanks stakeholders to get active and feel like there's a voice. I think that 1792 would be the same thing. Actually, with what I said, I think 1792 will be quicker because we'll be coming back with some options for you. I hope the TAPS panel gives us some reasonable options for you all to consider if you choose to, as to driving that course along 1792. So right there will be a very visual effort. But we can always put out an executive summary or something online. I can work with Clarissa to make sure that people understand. West Fairbanks, there was a whole website devoted to that, included all the TAPS information and everything. So lots to see and be seen on there. We'll do the same thing for 1792 on our city website as well.
I'd like to move this.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Just the only thing, Doris, so you will look at the cost. I just want to confirm that you'll look at the cost and discuss with the TAPS panel the opportunity to include.
Denny?
Yeah.
We will. Absolutely.
And this is going to be done in the April time frame,
yes,
you say?
Yes,
so we get a report back by the end of the second quarter or so?
We're hoping to bring you the recommendation from the TAPS panel in May so that
great.
We can move forward with, if there's any comp plan issues that we have to pick up, we want to be able to bring this to you
sure.
quickly.
You're not going to go far in case people ask questions.
No, I'm just limping over this chair.
Citizen comment. Any citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter, welcome to it this time. You'll need to complete the yellow card for the clerk and just identify yourself, please.
Okay. Can I do that, please?
Sure.
My name is Amy Schumann. I'm with Unicorp National Developments, and I just wanted to say that we're very excited that staff has brought this to your attention and that they're considering doing this ULI's report, because we are under contract with the Mount Vernon Inn, and in order to really execute an exciting redevelopment of this in the prime 1792 corridor, there would need to be a change in code that would give planners like Dory and Jeff some latitude to do some really exciting projects. Our architect put together some images of some other locations around the country, and we just wanted to demonstrate, which of course the planners and ULI already know, that projects such as this still allow some beautiful landscaping, generous sidewalks, hidden parking. And so we just wanted to say that we're in support of what Dory suggested as far as the ULI report, and would do anything that we can to assist, and hope that eventually this Mount Vernon Inn property could be a catalyst to really show that this report isn't shelved, and that what ULI finds could be executed at this site. So that's all. Thank you.
Other citizen comments? Hearing none, I close the floor for public comment. I think it's safe to say that the ULI process is very inclusive, so certainly we welcome good ideas, especially from the people who own land there, drive there, work there, live there. That's a critical part of the process, so I know that will happen. Great. For the commission discussion, clerk will read the roll on the motion before us.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Look forward to the results. Mr. Knight, 10B.
Yes, sir. At our work session last Monday, we had a nice, healthy conversation about the potential of bringing minor league baseball to Winter Park. And before you in your packet, you have a recommendation from staff that I felt was a consensus coming out of that work session. So we're looking, I'd be glad to answer any questions you have, but we're looking for a motion to do those four items there.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Randy, I think personally, I thought our work session was one of the best ones we've had. I thought there was good thinking, lots of questions still. I certainly have lots of questions, but I think this is a very important opportunity that we should continue on until such time frame as we have all the answers that we're seeking. So, Commissioner Cooper?
Randy, I did have a question. During the work session, the $11 to $30 million gap that we discussed didn't have the cost of land, or, and I understand it's site specific, but when it comes back to us in August, will it include what it costs to replace our youth sports fields?
Yes.
What it costs for land, what it costs for parking?
Good. Yes, sir.
So we'll have a good picture of that.
You did add parking in there, didn't you, Randy?
I did, and my numbers, but I don't know how detailed the breakout was. But
it'll be there in August when we look at it.
And only in one case might youth fields need to be replaced.
Right.
Three cases it wasn't.
That's the reason I said
and
we couldn't get it.
Those youth fields may need to be added, replaced, or whatever. We ought to be talking about that, whether or not we have to sign up.
Yeah, I think it's in our long-range plan for additive fields, because we've had such a high demand for our fields that the ones that we were going to put at the tree farm were over and above what we currently have at Lake Island.
Other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll open the floor for public comment. Citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter? Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already vote. Quick read the rule.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Randy, I guess you'll bring something back probably long before August 14th of 2014, but keeping the commission up to date.
Yes.
Whether there's opportunity or not. There may not be, or there may be. So that's great.
I have a question about that. As that process goes down the road, are we going to wait till the very end and hear where we are? Are those sites going to fall off along the way, or what's going to happen with that?
I'm not sure exactly how it'll play out. I would suspect there will be sites that fall out along the way.
Okay.
And I'll keep you informed.
Okay. Same way with funding, funders, and because I know there were a lot of criteria we established, like 30% of it's coming from the team and things like that that we talked about the other day.
There will be, right, the opportunities, some doors may get shut early, and I'll keep you posted on that. And so.
All right, thank you.
Great. Item 10C, I don't know who's speaking to this one, Andy. Is that you?
I can speak to it.
For Dave, right?
I see Debbie Kamansky is here also from the Palaszczuk, but at this site, there is a sewer, I won't use the right term, but there's a sewer line that's really under the pad where they want to put the Capen House. And Debbie got various bids, I think ranging from $26,000 to $28,000. David and his people looked at it and determined that we could do it, and the numbers in the packet, roughly roughly $11,000. And Debbie's asking if the city could help and have staff do that, and they reimburse us the $11,000. And we would, I mean, it's really, you know, it's material cost and labor cost on our behalf. We're not jacking it up for a profit. It's just a direct cost.
Would this, if we did it, would this come out of our water and sewer fund?
Well, if they reimburse us, it would be a wash for the city. The only thing we lose is some labor time.
I mean, we did it.
If we did it, it would come out of our water and sewer fund.
Water sewer fund. I mean, I think it's important that if it comes out of water sewer, that's one thing. I don't know that I want to put the citizens' taxes.
And the reserves are healthy for this in that fund. I mean, it's, if the commission decides to fund the whole thing, then there are funds there to make that happen.
I'd like to move it.
Is there a second?
I'm going to second, and then I'm going to put an amendment on that one as well. I'd like to amend that motion to include that the city pick up the cost of the installation.
I'd second that.
The installation of what?
The sewer line. The $11,000.
I assume that was what was being moved, but am I mistaken?
I assume that the motion, and Commissioner Sprinkle, correct me, I assume the motion was to...
The motion's the way it is written in here.
Yes.
Okay.
Where the classic would be reimbursing the city for that.
I don't think it needs to be amended if that's the motion.
And I that's what I did. I asked to amend the motion.
But you don't need to if she made the motion.
No, the staff report was we were to be reimbursed by
Flash. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, right. Forgive me.
And so he's changing that to say the city would pay it.
It's been seconded.
So we will vote on the amendment. Debbie, how much money have you all raised?
Well, to date, we've raised $587,000.
So some of that went to moving the
A lot of it went to moving.
So I guess this is a question that I've been asked by many citizens. We don't want to have another church situation where people moved two parts and didn't make it nice.
No, actually.
So what? I mean, I realize this is you got a sewer line underneath it. And that's a problem, but what, you know, if we do the sewer line tonight, are we still going to be looking at CAPE and separated for
no actually when we look back, it was only December 19th the second half of the house came over. It seems much longer since that time. The structural engineers came back with the foundation plan, which we submitted. It was right in the middle of the holiday period. There were a few delays in getting back and forth. It was very cooperative meetings with the general contractor and our architect, Steve Feller, who's here today. The city came back with some recommendations for some modifications to that foundation plan. It went back to the structural engineer. He got it back. We submitted it, and we picked up the permit to begin the foundation tomorrow.
Well,
so tomorrow morning, if it's not raining, the crew will arrive, and the foundation will begin under the half that we called Fred, who's sitting where he belongs, and hopefully within approximately 30 days, the half that's sitting in the middle of our parking lot will then be moved down and put into place next to Fred.
The sewer line.
I guess my
the
question.
Sewer
the
line
sewer under the ginger sign.
No, I got it.
Yeah,
no,
so it won't show slow anything down.
Whether there's
down.
Permitting or not involved, do you have the money to bring the two things together now?
Yes,
at this point?
We don't have 100% of the finished work, as in the interior and some of the landscaping.
So how much money do you have left, I guess, to complete the project? And $580,000 or whatever it's raised is fabulous. I just
yes,
like to have a sense if we're going to be asked for more money or where in the journey.
We are not anticipating asking the city for any further assistance.
So how much is left?
We, at this time, we're having additional estimates done on some of the exterior and grounds work. We hope to raise another $120,000 or so to finish that off. We've also applied for an Orange County facilities grant that we will know about in April that might assist really speed that part of the project up, because that's like the next step after the sewing the house back together and getting it sealed up and ready to open up. The Orange County facilities grant would undertake some of our exterior needs that are important for the long term.
Randy, if we put a sewer line in, doesn't matter if the Capon was on it, if we have a city sewer line, and this is not to serve that specific site, am I correct?
Right.
No, it serves the rest of the...
Do we just, I mean, I'm going to ask kind of a naive question, but are, do we have sewer lines that just run right through the middle of pieces of property?
We do.
Yeah. Lots so if somebody, I mean, somebody else said, well, there's a sewer line running right through the middle of my property and I want to build a pool in the backyard or whatever, what would we do?
We would
under
charge
that
them to relocate it. What would we do? Or require that they do it.
Say that again.
We would require that they relocate it before they build on that, over the line. Either that or we would not allow them to build over the line. This line serves other properties. It runs around the lake. And they requested at the commission meeting assistance, and we came back with our cost to do that.
If it's moved, is it the yellow line that it gets moved to? Not to be in the details, but...
I think the yellow line is the existing line, Mr. Mayor, and the red line is the line as it's relocated.
Can we move it in such a way that we'll never have to worry about it again, or is that too
that is,
asking too
that,
much?
That location of the new line should not have to be concerned about again.
David, to the mayor's point, if someone did come in, a private property owner, and wanted us and ran into the same scenario, I understand we'd ask them to move it or deny the application. Would we ever move it for them? Does the city ever engage in private?
The city typically does not do that unless there's a special situation like this where the commission directs us.
And I assume with the motion and the amendment, we're tapping this. We're not doing the, we're approving the budget, not necessarily approving the work, correct? I don't want, if the work entails another $20,000, if we go on overages, I want to be able to cap it. I want to be able to cap the city's exposure.
The request does not include reimbursement. I mean, includes reimbursement. If the amendment says we'll pay for it, I would assume that it would be for the amount of the work that we estimate, which is just under $11,000.
That's the way I read it, Commissioner. Yes, sir.
And hopefully you would consider the difference between private property owners and nonprofits serving the community.
Yeah, that's a real great point. I'm familiar with some not-for-profits that our utilities used to put in all kind of big green boxes, and they don't anymore. So I don't have any problems doing it personally. I don't support it. I want there to be a bright line that others know that doesn't mean that if there's a sewer line under your property, we may not still ask you to do it. So this is a building that obviously is going to be used ultimately by citizens, et cetera. So. Questions of Dave?
No, sir.
Commission discussion. Questions of Dave? I'm going to open the floor for public comment if there are citizens wishing to speak to us. If there aren't citizens wishing to speak to us, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already vote?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
That we'll be voting first on the amendment, which is that we will pay for this and do this in-house to the tune of, I guess it's $11,579. I'm assuming if it became $12,000, you wouldn't bring it back to us, but if it became $30,000, you probably would. I don't know.
Can we just throw a 10% variance on there or something?
Yeah, I would. I don't know if the makers of the amendment would be willing to do that.
I'm accepting of that, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, she amended it, so you have to, you were the maker of the main motion.
Thank you, exactly.
I appreciate that we can be involved with this project in this very, very small way. Also, I'm concerned that we might have a project that I don't want it to become our
business.
Well, I don't know what's that big site up in Altamont Springs with the
windows
that never got finished.
The eyesore on I-4?
Yeah, that's an affectionate name. Well, I'm concerned when projects occur and we don't have them all the money in place. So
I have one more question just based on that. Was this a surprise to us when we brought the project over? How come this was not in the budget? I mean, how did this get to this stage? It seems with a $600,000 budget and a $12,000 item.
I don't know that they knew the sewer line was under there till later on.
I mean,
it'd just be interesting to know.
I don't think the contractors are donating their
time. No, it comes at a very odd angle across that property, and those manholes have been very grown over and somewhat hidden for years. So when we first came forward with the project, we had no idea it cut way up on that particular piece of the lot. The rest of it comes across much closer to the lake.
Thank you. I'd probably feel a lot better about my vote if everybody who's lobbied me on this had put money into the project. Those who don't haven't. So
when we
those
met
who
with
do the, haven't. Go ahead.
When we met with the contractor, it was... it was later on when the final location was firmed up, and we did explain to them the situation, and that's when they started getting prices to relocate it, and that started the whole ball rolling.
Is there anything else we don't know about?
We better hope not. And the last thing we want is to be the eyesore on Osceola Avenue. We want this open as quickly as possible.
You already voted on the amendment?
Yes, sir.
The wrong amendment, which is to pay for ourselves. The city
Commissioner
system.
Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Now, the main motion, which would be as amended, that the city would pay the $11,500, not to exceed 10% of that. Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Good luck. Item D, 10D. Randy, you speak into this matter?
I certainly can. I don't see Cindy, but as we have an election coming up, we need to appoint a canvassing board.
She's protected by the
police. Oh, I see her now. So there's only four of us that can serve since one of us is up for election or re-election. And well, there's one of us that, for whatever reason, can't serve, so I guess this might be... Help me understand what Cindy's role might be. We should appoint her as an alternate no matter what, in case somebody gets sick or what. What's the...
Right.
If
right.
you could help us, Cindy, with that.
For whatever reason, helpful. Someone gets conflicted out or can't make it.
I'm about to make a motion. I just want to do it in such a way that includes Cindy's work as clerk if she can serve. I want to be fair.
Okay.
Tonight,
no, really. I'm allowed to serve as a member of the canvassing board if we cannot reach a quorum. We need at least three for the quorum, just like we would in a regular meeting here. And so if someone cannot attend to be part of it, I can be the third person.
Commissioner Cooper already said she can't be there, so
okay.
I guess I need to pull my fellow commissioners. I haven't even looked at my schedule, but I'll certainly make myself available.
And having done this before, Mr. Mayor, I would highly recommend that Cindy
should we appoint her as an alternate?
She should be one of the three, I believe. Having done this before.
No, but I mean, can we appoint four with her as an alternate in case somebody doesn't come? Can we appoint the three commissioners that remain and her as an alternate? So if
yes,
like a jury, if right. for whatever reason somebody can't serve, then that person takes over. Is that fair?
Yes.
Can I do that?
Your charter provides specifically that you are to appoint three of your members, to the canvassing board, and that I think this is what we're talking about as far as the disqualification. No commissioner or mayor shall participate in canvassing of the returns for which said commissioner or mayor is a candidate or subject to recall. That's the
right.
would be the definition
and we've
for
done
any.
That.
For any disqualified city commissioner or mayor, the city clerk shall act as the alternate canvassing board member. So the city clerk may act as the alternate canvassing board member for only a disqualified city commissioner or mayor.
So I suppose somebody could be disqualified if they didn't show up.
That's not how it's defined in your charter.
So she couldn't, I'm sorry, so Cindy could not be appointed directly as a canvassing board member. She can only be appointed as a...
She can be appointed as
so
a...
I could disqualify one of you right off the bat and then appoint her if we wanted
well,
to do that.
Commissioner
get rid of the guy who's bravest.
Commissioner already is disqualified.
Right.
So you'd be appointing Cindy to fill in her spot. So you got five. At least three of you need to show up to canvass.
I like that approach. I'm going to move that the commission, with the exception of Commissioner Sprinkle, be appointed to the canvassing board and that Cindy Bonham, our city clerk, be appointed in the... disqualified person's role. Does that accomplish what we need to do?
Well, not exactly.
Well, Bill?
I'm trying.
Okay, help me.
The charter says you're supposed to appoint three. Not the whole commission, less one. You're supposed to select three.
And if one of the, and then you have the for any disqualified city commissioner, which you have one, here. You can appoint the city clerk as an alternate. So my the way I'm reading your charter is you appoint three of your four, because you have four of five that are not disqualified, and you appoint your city clerk as an alternate for the one that is disqualified.
So you appoint Sarah and have six.
No.
You appoint Mayor Bradley, myself, and Commissioner McMackin, and appoint Cindy.
That's right.
That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Okay.
That's Since Commissioner Cooper is not available, she said, so my first motion didn't have a second, so I will move that the canvassing board be Mayor Bradley, Commissioner Leary, and Commissioner McMackin, and that Cindy Bonham, our clerk, be appointed as the alternate to that.
I will second that.
Thank you. Commission discussion? I'll open floor for public comment. Any citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter? A little inside baseball commentary. As I understand, a canvassing board ultimately looks at the way the election works, make sure everything is done fairly, and ultimately serves as a hanging chad committee, if necessary, I guess. So, as I understand it, am I correct? Never
had it.
Tom, you did it once
before. I did it once before. I get you to participate in it to see the inner workings of the election process.
I think it's fascinating. Right? There's a lot that's done for our election.
Yeah. George has done a lot of them. Would you like him to do that?
No, we can't. It has to be members of us.
I know.
Okay.
Can I vote on this, Mr. Attorney?
Mr. Reichman, if she should.
Yes, she may vote. Okay. She just can't serve.
Okay.
I open the floor for public comment. Citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter? Seeing none, close the floor. Cindy, did you have anything you wanted to say?
Yes, sir. I need two other motions that are in your packet to accept the canvassing criteria set by the state and used by Orange County for canvassing the absentees, and to allow the supervisor of elections to open and run all the absentees through the tabulator ahead of time that are valid and not questionable.
Great. We have a simultaneous public hearing, and we'll deal with all of these at once. I will reopen our public hearing. I'll move to accept the canvassing criteria set by the state and used by Orange County for canvassing absentee ballots. Is there a second? Thank you, Commissioner Leary. I'm also going to move to allow the Orange County Supervisor of Elections to open and run all absentee ballots through the tabulator ahead of time that are not questionable and are valid without ascertaining the results until 7 p.m. And I'm assuming that's on the day of the election.
Yes, sir.
I will second that.
Thank you, Commissioner Leary. We'll have a simultaneous public hearing. I'll open the floor again for citizens wishing to speak now about the three motions that are before us, which will require three distinct votes. Hearing no citizens speak to that matter, Commission, any further discussion? Clerk will read the roll on the first motion, which is that we are appointing Commissioners McMackin, Leary, and Mayor Bradley to the canvassing board with Clerk Bonham as the alternate.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. That deals with one of the matters. Now, the clerk will read the roll on the motion to accept the canvassing criteria as set by the state and used by Orange County.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Lastly, the last motion is to allow the Orange County Supervisor elections to open and run all absentee ballots through the tabulator ahead of time that are not questionable or valid without ascertaining the results until 7 p.m. on the day of the election.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Thank you very much.
And Mayor, excuse me, just one more quick thing. If I can remind the canvassing board that there's two meeting dates, not just election night. You also have to be there on the 13th.
Will you send that to us?
Yes, sir, I will. I'll send you a reminder.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. I think our citizens should have faith in our election process. There are certainly multiple checks and balances in that. It's the fundamental right that we have as citizens to vote for our elected officials, and I would encourage all citizens to vote on that day or before. Before us, Monday, May 26, 2014, a potential cancellation has been historically one that we've canceled. I'm going to move for the cancellation of this meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. I heard Commissioner Sprinkle with that. Any commission discussion?
Mr. Mayor, my only question is, I was going to ask Randy, do we have other things going on that are time sensitive around that date? Because I'm fine with canceling it if we don't. That's
at this time, we don't have anything that's time sensitive.
Okay, thank you.
If something did come up and we needed to call a special meeting within the appropriate time frame, we could do that
as well, yes, sir.
Yeah. I'll open the floor for public comment if any citizens wish to speak to us about this matter. Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close the floor for public comment and ask the clerk to read the roll on this motion.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes.
I'm going to ask the staff to quit smiling.
That didn't get the staff a day.
Okay. Mr. Reichman, can I deal with these other matters even if it's before the 5 o'clock hour?
Yes, you may.
I don't think any of these were time notice.
No.
I'm going to ask you to read item 11A, a resolution, into the record, please.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, this is a resolution of the City Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida, pursuant to Chapter 170 of Florida statutes, declaring that the city is to fund capital improvements in and for the city, to wit, underground electricity, or BHN, facilities along Seminole Drive. Further declaring that the cost of said improvements shall be partially paid by special assessments levied against real property specially benefited by said improvements, specifying the manner of and time for paying the special assessments, and inviting the public to review the project plans and specifications in the assessment plat, all of which are on file at the Office of the City Clerk of the City of Winter Park, confirming the special assessments for the undergrounding of electricity or BHN facilities within the municipal boundaries of the City of Winter Park, consisting of properties adjacent to Seminole Drive, and providing an effective date.
Of the will of the Commission on this matter?
Move it.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you, Commissioner Cooper. Commission discussion? Memory serves me, this is part of a process that we've been undertaking with our... This is the continuation. Am I correct, or is this a new parcel, Randy?
This is the same one.
The same one, that's what I thought. Okay, there's a motion, a second. Further commission discussion? I'll open the floor for public comment if there's any citizens wishing to speak to us. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You ready to vote? Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Mr. Reichman, if you could read item 11B, a resolution, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, this is a resolution of the City Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida, designating the property located at 1873 Glencoe Road, Winter Park, Florida, as a historic resource on the Winter Park Register of Historic Places. And, Mr. Mayor, this is a quasi-judicial hearing.
I've had no communication on this matter.
Neither have I.
Neither have I.
None, sir.
I would move for approval, Mr. Mayor.
Is there a second?
Second.
Commission discussion? I'm assuming this has met whatever staff criteria that they review.
It has.
Looks like. Great. Can I ask, Dory, did this come to us via the owner, via somebody who thought it was a good idea, via staff knocking on the door? How did it happen?
It came via Mr. and Mrs. Wood.
Great.
And they're very lovely people who had a nice visit with the Historic Preservation Board, and here we are.
And are voluntarily doing
it. Yes, sir. Great.
Mr. Mayor, I do have one question.
Yes.
I noticed that the addition or the renovation that was presented at the same meeting,
yes,
to the Historic Preservation, and was that tabled?
No, it was approved.
It was approved?
The renovation was approved.
Okay.
So they're asking for renovation at the same time, or they're just asking that their renovated spot be?
No, their renovation doesn't have to come to you, as I understand it. Just the designation comes to you, so the designation is looking for the resolution.
And can you tell me, Dory, just for benefit of the Commission, the benefits, while I've got you here, I'm going to down on. What incentives are available right now to folks who want to do this? I think it's great that they're putting it on the historic registry. I just want to make sure that I understand, because I've heard people have asked me, and I'm not as tight to it. So are the tax benefits, and again, I'd like to encourage people to do this, but I want to make sure that the information that's out there is correct.
I would be happy to share those with you. I don't have that in front of me right now. I need to check with staff on that.
There
are benefits to both single property owners. There's more benefits to districts, but there are some benefits to single property owners. And one of the things that the HPB is now looking into are what other incentives we might be able to add to the pot, and what other incentives actually property owners who own older homes would like to see be added to the pot to incentivize people to come forward. That's part of the survey. Yes, sir.
Was this listed on our master list or the master file? And if so, what number is it? Number what out of our master file, do you know?
I can't answer that, Mayor, and I'm sorry. I had told Lindsay I would take this item because she was out of pocket for the afternoon, but I can find that out for you if you'd like.
I'd like to know. And would this property qualify for the Federal Registry also?
That I don't know either.
I'd like to know that, too. Commissioner Sprinkle?
And I remember that when we
gave that charge to the historical board back in July, I think it was. This was part of it, was incentives that they could come back with. So it's a, probably a really good time to talk about what those might be.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Further commission discussion? I'm assuming the applicant has the ability to speak if they're here. I don't know if they're here or not. I don't see them. I'll open the floor for public comment if any citizens wish to speak to us about this matter. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already voted. Clerk will read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Item C on second reading. 11C, please, Mr. Reichman.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, this is an ordinance for the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Section 58-84 relating to non-residential zoning districts and the conditions required for a special event, providing for severability, codification, conflicts, and an effective date.
I would move for approval.
Thank you.
And I'll second.
Mr. Knight, something was going to change between our last reading and this, and as I read it, I couldn't figure that out. Could you help me?
The change, I believe, is the underline on 15.
Yeah.
It's the last clause at the very end.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was added. Right at the very, after the comma, or if, from that point forward, right at the bottom.
This one, where it's underlined. It's on page
Item
81.
15 is brand new?
Yes, sir. That's what I understood.
It wasn't. It was there the way it was.
The memory serves.
That was there between, as I understand it, as a result, reading from the minutes of the first reading, the last clause within 15, after the comma, which reads, or if display or offer of arts or crafts for sales on city property and with the city's express permission.
Well, the whole thing was underlined. That's why it would be hard
to
identify what was changed if the whole thing's underlined.
The whole thing's underlined because that's what's changing from our existing code.
Right.
But, yes, that last after the comma, as Bill said, is the change from last time.
So if this passes as it did on first reading, the ability to do an arts festival in a church or whatever, or a school, I'm assuming would not be permitted. Is that correct?
Correct.
If it was in the window.
I'm sorry, that was confusing. Yeah, that's why I'm going to vote against it. I mean, I like what we're trying to do to protect the arts festival, but just the ramifications are too frightening for me. I don't want to deny a school if they want to have an arts festival on April 1st that they can't do that. And we would deny them this under this ordinance, as I read it.
And it's only if it's for sale. So a school could have a display of art that they just couldn't have for sale.
Great. There's a motion and a second on second reading. Further commission discussion? Open the floor for public comment. Citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter? Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already vote.
One quick question, Mayor. When it says with the city's express permission, is the city commission? Is the city manager? Who is the city?
It's me. In this case, I signed the special events permits for those types of things.
The only way a church would be impacted with this would be if a church wanted to go out and get a special permit to do something like that, correct?
And it'd be art for sale.
And to sell art, so, yes, right.
Sell art, usually they just display art.
Right.
Because I also hear people
want to
do that inadvertently to a church.
I mean, I think our spring and our art fall festivals are the cat's meow for our city and probably one of the best things we do in our city. But I also think they can stand alone, and I think they're big established programs, and I just hate to limit anybody's rights to do this.
Can you hear me now?
I'm sorry. Thank you very much. I said I don't want to deny anybody's rights to do this. So that's why I'm voting against this. You ready to vote? Clerk will read the roll.
Yeah, have we opened it up to the public?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
and there
sorry.
Was none. Thank you, Bill.
Okay, sorry. That's my vote.
Clerk will read the roll.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
No. Ordinance on first reading, reissuance of bonds.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor. An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, authorizing the issuance of not exceeding $16 million in electric revenue bonds of the City of finance its outstanding electric revenue bonds, Series 2005A, tendered for purchase by the holders thereof, and to pay the cost of issuance thereof, providing for the payment of such bonds from the net revenues derived from the electric system of the City on parity with the City's outstanding electric revenue bonds, providing for the sale of such bonds pursuant to a private negotiated sale, a competitive public sale, or a negotiated public sale, and providing an effective date.
Tonight, Mr. Hamill, I don't know if you want to discuss this with us.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we currently have just under $16 million of the old auction rate securities remaining outstanding in the electric utility. These are variable rate securities. We've obviously been watching the market, and you know it's continued to stay low, and so we've been experiencing very favorable interest rates. But we've been concerned about rates going up in the near future, so this is an opportunity to go out and do what we call it, what's called a tender offer, and to see if any of those bondholders are willing to sell the bonds back at less than par. We did this back several years ago, and we're very successful, got some of them back at 91 cents on the dollar, took out I think 25 million of them at that time. And so we have this remaining $15,260,000. We'd like to do that tender offer again. But this ordinance just gets it in place so that we can do this. We will come back to you with the exact numbers and the interest rate and all of that for your approval at the time.
Great. Will the commission on this matter?
Move it.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. I'm assuming it's been through our bond council, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
You've done this several times. Seems is the timing right, you're thinking and suggesting?
We believe it is. Time will tell, of course. If we look back 10 years from now and the interest rate stayed below 0.5%, we'll say we blew it. But rates are low enough right now that if we locked in, we should get
through. Do we know what we would be locking in at? 2, 3, if that?
Yeah. Our financial advisor in the coming up.
Mayor, Commission Members, Jay Glover from Public Financial Management, the City's Financial Advisor. This resolution gives you flexibility to do a number of different financing types to get this transaction completed. That's kind of to be determined at this point, but we're thinking you would lock in something around the 3% level on a fixed rate basis. And again, the payback on these is about 20 years. So we would actually refinance them over the existing term of the loan with no extension of maturity. But the exact rate won't be determined until we actually go to the market to get the deal done.
And that would be dependent, obviously, upon what the discount rate is to what we pay for them.
The thought would be that you're locking in a higher fixed rate, but you're also buying them at a discount. So all in, you're probably going to be paying a higher rate than you otherwise would now. But as rates increase, this rate's actually going to increase almost at a double rate the way the fail rate works. So it's important to do it before short-term rates go up.
We have a motion and a second. Further commission discussion or questions?
Randy, this 3% was already built into our 10-year performance.
Yes, we've been both in our performer and the way we budget each year, we factor it in as though it's already fixed.
Okay, right.
You
said that question.
Great. I'll open the floor for public comment. Any citizens wishing to speak to us of this matter can do that. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already vote?
Yes, sir.
Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes, on first reading. I don't think you have anything to read on this matter, Mr. Eichmann.
I do not. This is quasi-judicial, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Briggs?
The Village Park Senior Housing Project at 550 North Denning desires to amend their conditional use and their development agreement. They have on each of the three floors of their project what was anticipated to be a storage locker amenity in the middle of each floor, and that hasn't really been used by the tenants, so they are desiring to take that space and convert it into an additional apartment on each one of those floors, which would take it from 105 apartments to 108. But they are completely maxed out in terms of the density that's permitted under the R4 zoning. So what they have done is purchased the adjacent property. If you could put overhead up, please. At 796 West Swoop, which is directly to the east. You could put that closer.
The Elmo.
No. No, the Elmo.
He's got the slide, the Elmo.
And that property next door, 80 by 250, is zoned R3. And under the R3 zoning, what you could build there is 7 units. And there's 4 units on there now, 4 individual houses. So there's leftover development potential of an additional 3 units. So what this does is join this property in as more or less as a condominium component and allows the transferring of those 3 unused units into the main building. So again, you can put the 3 apartments where the storage lockers are. And then the development agreement caps the future development potential of this adjacent piece at the 4 units that are there today, since and the only 4 that are allowed since the 3 have been moved over to the other project. So at P&Z, you see that there was a recommendation for approval. We didn't spend too much time talking about the aspects of the request. We spent almost all the time talking about the staff recommendation, which had been to downzone that property to R2. And that was simply an administrative request that as we go forward, people will remember there's a development agreement, but when you see an R2 property and open the code book, it says 7 units, and you would assume as time goes by that you could build 7 until later on you find out about the development agreement. So we talked about that at length at P&Z, whether that was needed or not. Ultimately, P&Z decided not to do that, not to recommend that as part of it. They felt the development agreement restriction was sufficient. So with that overview, I'll answer any questions.
Questions of Mr. Briggs.
Mr. Mayor, I have one.
Please, Commissioner McMacken.
Jeff, in addition to density, R3 and R2 carry different height allowances. Is that not the case? With R3, you can essentially go to a 3-story.
Well, you can do, in essence, 2.5 stories. You can do the 3rd story with.
Right, but you can still do that within an R3, and within an R2, you're.
It's just 2 stories.
It's just 2 stories.
And
okay.
It's 30 feet in R2 versus 35 in R3.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I just wanted to refresh.
Commissioner Cooper?
Thank you. I just wanted to refresh my memory to make sure I'm remembering this properly. Initially, the comprehensive plan shows this particular area. Is it included in the 3-story height, or is it included in the...
It doesn't apply to residential properties.
Because it's an R4, commercial. Is that what happens with that?
The height map is only commercial properties.
Okay, so that wouldn't have fallen under that. And the next question I have for you is, we already gave this project a 5 density unit per acre bonus because it was affordable housing. Is that correct?
Correct.
And trying to work this out. We also gave them a parking variance that allowed them to have less parking places than they were required, I think, et cetera. And will this further enhance the parking variance, the need for a parking variance?
It does minimally. It takes it from 1.62 spaces per unit to 1.57. As you're hearing a second from the applicant, they're finding that they're using even less parking than that.
And as I read through the minutes, it says that Mrs. Wilson stated that her client was willing to go along with the R2 zone. So,
let me understand that.
I was just reading it from the minute, the PNC minutes.
Okay. Jeff, what's the zoning in this block? Can you kind of, I'm not seeing it from this plan here.
Well, the dark green that you see on the map is where the Village Park Senior Apartments are. That is all R4.
That's R4.
This particular property is R3.
Item number 2 on the top, okay.
The rest of the block is single family R1A.
Including 3, 2, 1, and 10 below?
Including all the other lots there. We talked about, although we never came to a conclusion, what should the zoning for those long, deep 250-foot lots off of the north side of Canton be? And while we talked about scenarios, nothing was really ever concluded. That will probably be coming back very shortly, because there is going to be a development request for some of that land, so we will deal with that future zoning given the large depth of the lots. I don't think there's going to be any change with the single family homes in front on Capon. Capon's a single family residential street.
So I just want to make sure that this is clear to me. We're sort of doing a density transfer, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay. So normally, if you bought this lot and you used the density in this facility, then you definitely would not be able to use it in this other portion. So if we zoned it R2, they haven't lost any ability. I want to make sure that that's...
Right now, they're allowed 7 units from this property.
And they
there's
could build
4
7
there.
That require parking and everything.
4 in the future. We're moving 3, transferring it into the main building. And the R2 zoning would cap them to the 4 units. That was the reason staff
suggested. Could they build 7 on that size of the site, with the normal site plan?
Today they can,
they
but
could.
If they transfer the
okay. I just want to make sure they do it.
Mm-hmm.
To clarify that, they can't do that if we do what's been asked of us to be done tonight.
That's right. We have,
yeah,
so
that's the whole point.
Right.
Right. Right. Okay.
But the so they build 7 tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does the applicant want to speak?
Good evening. Rebecca Wilson with Lowndes Trust Industrial Canton Reed here on behalf of the applicant. Just quickly, I'm happy to answer any questions. It sounds like you all understand exactly what is going on and what's being requested. I just wanted to say that we are at, and I asked last week, we were at 90% occupancy.
Great.
The park is going to open up in the next week or so that is on that corner. And we were actually surprised to find that most of our residents and applications are coming from Maitland and Winter Parks. There really is a need here that we would like to be able to meet. As Jeff went through, this is actually, I can show you the plans. This is actually highlighted. This is the original approval. That it, you can see all the doors through there. There were several storage units we were building, thinking that there would be a market for people who sold their larger homes, moved into senior housing, and kept their stuff. What we found is they gave it all to their children instead of bringing it with them. So we wanted to use that space stories 2, 3, and 4 to add an additional unit. And as you saw from the minutes, we don't object to a rezoning, but as Jeff made it clear in P&Z, you all are not considering a rezoning tonight. You would have to actually properly notice that and have an ordinance pending before you. Thanks.
Great. Questions of the applicant? If they're willing to take any? Will the commission,
Mr. Mayor, before I make a motion, I'd like, this is a quasi-judicial, and I'd like to disclose that I have spoken to counsel for the applicant.
So have I.
I have received voicemail from counsel. I have returned or spoken to counsel.
I would like to move for approval with a, I'm sorry.
No, you didn't say anything, but we've all identified if we've had any ex parte communication.
Yeah. Other than I guess I ran into Dan of a night in a restaurant. We spoke briefly there. I think specifically about this.
Commissioner?
I'd like to move for approval with the inclusion of staff's recommendation that the subject property be rezoned R2.
Second.
I'd like to amend that we would not have in the main motion the R2, but keeping the R3 as planning and zoning pass. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Okay. Can you clarify for me what we just did here?
He's moved it.
Okay, he's moved it, but amended it.
No, I've moved it with staff recommendation.
He moved it to say that it could be down zoned to R2.
But that's not what we got in here.
Yes, it is.
That was staff's recommendation, but that's not what P&Z passed.
That's not what P&Z passed.
So I moved to eliminate his motion,
right,
that part of the motion, and have what P&Z passed if that amendment passed.
And I do want to clarify, on the original motion, Mr. Mayor, on the original motion, if that passes without amendment, all you're doing tonight is approving the change to the development agreement. It would then be basically staff direction to staff to move forward towards the process of amending your land development code to change the zoning.
Which would still have to come back
to you. Absolutely. To go to your planning board and back to this council with appropriate notice and public hearings.
And Mr. Mayor, if you give me a little latitude here, I'd like to explain why I made the original motion. Randy, could you put that on the overhead for me, please? Because this has been longstanding with the original approval going way back to the Atlantic Housing initial approval, and in my crew, with my lack of my daughter, you're getting hand graphics now and not the great computer graphics that normally were presented. I approved the original, voted to approve the original application way back when the applicant asked for a fourth floor on Denning. And one of the reasons I did that is that from a planning standpoint, I thought they were very sensitive to the surrounding neighborhood, in which case they went from a four-story to a three-story to a two-story that I thought embraced the single-family zoning next to them. And it's really in the city that I found over the last 25 years, it's the edges where you get the friction. And so what you see in what I call A up there is kind of the existing condition as it is now. There's this development, there's a single family house on the gray area, and the property we're talking about is the red hatched area. And right now there's four single family units in various states of repair on that. If we go to the R2, and the reason I asked Jeff about the heights is that it would still maintain that lower height relationship on the subject property to the single family, which again, I thought the applicant way back when really did a great job of addressing the first time around. If we stay with the R3, you're able to go higher, which is that example on what C shows. And my experience is that generally development in the city expands to fill the zoning allotted to it. And I have no doubt that the possibility that could be 35 feet or whatever it is would occur. And so that's why I was generally in favor of staff's or of the applicant in the first place, I thought staff's recommendation that we pursue an R2 zoning for this would ensure that the good planning that the initial project represented would be continued on this piece. And so I think it really represents an opportunity to continue to address how do you do a development of this size next to single family. Because I think, as Jeff said, that row of single family along there is probably going to be single family as it is now. It's likely not to go up in scale. So I'm very, as you can see, interested in seeing this R2 zoning for the subject property, not only approving what they've asked for, but seeing us pursue an R2 zoning for the subject property. And that's why I made the motion.
Great.
And I just wanted to explain that to my fellow.
That's very helpful. I'm looking at C. If they didn't come to us tonight, there could be seven units on it, and they could get what's in C no matter what.
And we have an opportunity, I think, to do two good things.
To me, the developer's agreement accomplishes that without needing to rezone it. But
well, I won't go into the history of development agreements. I'll leave that for another time.
I guess the comprehensive plan, in its wisdom, put this as an R3, I guess.
Commissioner Kamakian, the reason I seconded the mayor's motion is I think at a later time, I'm happy to consider that. I just think right now I'd like to move forward with the motion on the table that was presented to us as a recommendation.
Well,
I'm certainly happy to.
Well, and Commissioner, I we're not voting on this as council told us. We're not voting on the R2 zoning tonight. We're asking staff to pursue that. So I
certainly don't know. I think we can ask outside the motion.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, Vinny.
Okay. Further commission discussion? Open the floor for public comment if citizens wish to speak to us about this matter.
Dan Bellows, 411 West New England Avenue. This property is, it's been a long haul, but you know, almost 16 years of assembling this land, and this flag shape, you know, as you know, is R4, but then I had about a year ago purchased this lot, and it was R1A, and the city saw fit to rezone it to R4, and when that happened, I really wanted the rest of this to go to R3, but the city wanted, PNZ had suggested that the city look at the whole block. I have subsequently assembled everything that's in yellow here, and an application has formally been submitted to the city, and it starts the process in April, PNZ, and then the city commission. And I'm under contract with this land, with David Weekly, to build townhomes and some apartments back here. To this effect, where you have townhomes fronting the street with garages in the back and then three-story apartments that back up to the three-story parking garage, etc. This commission may also remember that the commission voted to allow to retain 100 parking spaces in the garage, which there's a recorded agreement for that, and to participate in some capacity as a shared stormwater. I would suggest to you when you have a situation like this with three-story, you know, City Winter Park property, a large church on 4 acres, existing R4 and R3 adjacent to this type of property, this is where you would keep R3. And as with every project I've ever done, I have to come in front of the city commission. You can, as a conditional use for various things with the product that's being built, lay further restrictions. But I would strongly encourage the city not to consider downzoning the property as we acquired property adjacent to it because it was zoned R3 and R4. Thank you.
Thank you. Other citizens wishing to speak to us on this matter? Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already vote on the amendment?
Yes.
Wait.
On
the amendment to turn.
The amendment is to keep it, well, keep the zoning at R3 and use PNZ's recommendation.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
All right. As I look at this and I see what they came here and asked us for, they really asked us for two things, correct? Am I misreading this? They asked us for two things. The first thing is they wanted to make sure that the seven, that those get counted into the new place, right?
Three of them get counted
into the new place. So that's one ask. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
So that's your understanding also, okay? And so I read that when I read the summary and I see what the request is. So as I look at this, where does the request is? Don't they have to come back to us anyway with whatever else that's going to be? I mean, if they, we just,
my understanding, okay. Commissioner, is that the applicant is not asking for a rezoning of the property.
Right.
They are asking to use some of the density of that property to allow them to build additional units within their building currently.
That's what I thought.
Yes. The request, as I understand it, is for rezoning at a future date, is from staff.
It's an
Okay, well, this is where I'm having trouble, because I'm ready to do what they ask us to do tonight. What I wasn't ready to do was what the staff is asking us to do tonight, because I didn't see that in here.
Then you'll vote for the amendment, and...
Okay.
So the, my understanding of the two amendments is one amendment...
There's only one amendment.
Well, no, I'm sorry, my understanding of the two things we're going to vote on is there an amendment that would take planning and zoning's recommendation on this item, and there's also a vote on whether or not we would take staff's recommendation on this.
Right, and if it's amended, it will be the amended planning and zoning one, so...
Yes.
Do you see why that's frustrating and a little bit disturbing to me to have that happen on top of the first ask? Okay, the first ask I was ready to go with a 7-4. I'm okay there.
And that still will happen.
And that rule will happen fine. The one that I wasn't prepared for were the two that were in conflict with each other. So we now have a conflict to look at. I wasn't prepared.
We have an opportunity for a solution. I mean, conflict is a rough word, but no, we're...
No, there's a conflict in the two, because there's two different ways to look at it. Okay.
Administrative zoning is just opens up a lot of...
Well, which this isn't administrative rezoning. This is merely requesting staff to pursue rezoning.
Well,
this,
I think, and I don't want to argue
the other way around,
but I think that would certainly constitute an administrative rezoning.
And you're adding into the main motion
A
contingency that they consider something, that staff consider something, which I think is almost, it's just this nebulous thing. I'd rather approve this original motion than future staff, if it's important to bring that back, they can certainly bring back to rezone on themselves. And that's, Tom, where I'm
And that is exactly where my problem is.
I appreciate that. I don't view it that way, but I appreciate it.
And for me, I feel better to be here that you are getting the policy statement that says, as the commission, we respect this neighborhood and we respect the thoughtful plan that led to the first tapering down to get to the neighborhood. So I'm very thrilled to have that opportunity to give that policy statement.
I just think you're mixing apples and oranges. I want the first ask out of the way, and then we'll go with the second one. That's the way I look at it. So there you go.
The clerk's going to read the roll on the amendment, which is to, out of the main motion, maintain the zoning as per planning and zoning's decision. Clerk will read the roll on the amendment.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
No.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
No.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes, so the amendment fails. So now we're moving administrative zoning to R2. That process will continue, and we'll vote this. I don't even know why we're doing
Wait, aren't we now voting for the 7-4? Did I just mess up?
I don't know what you voted for.
Did I mess up?
I can't speak to what you voted for.
I'm having trouble with this because I didn't realize that. So can I bring it back?
Mr. Reichman?
If she was voted on the prevailing side, she can make a motion for reconsideration.
Okay.
Would you like me to talk?
Please help me out here.
The amendment that Mayor Bradley made would have been the recommendation that came from P&Z that we move this without addressing the rezoning issue. The main motion that Commissioner McMackin made was the recommendation from P&Z along with staff reconsideration of rezoning is in the future. So when you voted no for the amendment, then you're voting for staff to consider zoning sometime in the future, rezoning in the future. If we vote the main motion ahead.
And because the
When is the main motion going to be heard?
Well, it's about to hear.
If you go for reconsideration.
And she could, because she was on the prevailing side.
Right.
Then you can vote as P&Z recommended.
But we haven't moved on. She could change her vote if she chose to do that, too. I believe. Am I correct, Mr. Reichman?
The vote's been taken, Mr. Mayor, so there would have to be a reconsideration by this commission.
Well, we've let commissioners in the past change their votes hours into the commission.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to make a problem here. I'm asking to bring it back because... What I basically wanted to do tonight was to vote on the prevailing side that said that we were going to just deal with the one issue. What we've done tonight with the two amendments is we're not allowing ourselves to just deal with that issue. because we're saying, well, I guess we are, because we're saying you have to keep it the way the P&Z said it, or we have to keep it the way the staff said it. Yes. That's what we're saying.
That's essentially what we're saying.
That's essentially what
and
we're
Tom
saying.
Tom said, I want it the way staff said it, and my
right.
amendment would change it to the way P&Z said it.
Right. And, I would like a reconsideration.
So, Mr. Eichmann, I don't know what a move to reconsider means. That needs to be seconded?
Yes, that's correct.
So I can second that?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, you may.
So we haven't taken the next motion yet, so we've moved and seconded that, and we can discuss that motion, I guess. Is
yes,
that correct?
Sir.
Discussion about the move to reconsider? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to read the roll on the motion to reconsider.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Okay, we are reconsidering the amendment that was placed before us. The amendment said that the main motion would not have the rezoning from R3 to R2 in it, and thus it would be, if passed, the way planning and zoning voted. We clear?
Yes, sir.
Clerk, we'll read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
No.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Now the main motion, as amended, would allow the developer's agreement to take place. It does not do the administrative zoning, and it is now amended if we pass it.
I would like to make a motion that we give staff policy direction to move forward with an R2 zoning on this lot as agreed to by the client and as...
So I don't know how to deal with it. You want to make that after this one passes?
That's outside of this vote.
So are you moving to amend it, the main motion? You've got a separate issue on the table. This is ruling the chair, so you've got a separate issue on the table. And your motion, unless you're moving an amendment, you could certainly put that into the record after we vote on the main motion. Okay, we're gonna have the clerk read the roll on the motion as amended. Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Commissioner Cooper, you wanted to make another motion?
I would like to make a motion that we give policy direction to staff to review the appropriateness of R2 zoning on this piece of property.
To give staff to review?
Yes. Have staff review the appropriateness of R2 zoning.
So what would their work be? They would just come back and say they did it and they reviewed it, or they think that the recommendation is good?
If they believe that is appropriate to move forward with an administrative rezoning on the property.
Okay, that's helpful. So you're moving an administrative rezoning on the property. Is there a second?
It's not a second, but Commissioner, I think the Commission gave staff that direction by virtue of the amendment to the motion that I made. So I'm gonna let that one ride, and I'm not gonna second it, but I wanted you to know why.
So is there any seconds? That fails for lack of a second. It's the 5 o'clock hour. I'm gonna go ahead and take public comment, and then we're gonna see if we need a break before we get into signs. Citizens wishing to speak to us about matters that are not on our agenda.
Hi, my name is Deirdre McNabb, and I live at 1860 Summerland Avenue in Winter Park. And I am not speaking today as the president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, but as a resident of Winter Park. I do travel around the state and speak to communities, cities, and counties frequently on the issues of planning. And I will tell you that I'm always proud to be from Winter Park, because it is like living in a community that is the gifted child in Florida. Everybody wants to see and know what Winter Park is doing, because we are always on the cutting edge of good ideas and progress. In particular, I want to commend you on the new train station that is about to open, which looks fantastic. Also the solar canopy that you recently inaugurated, which is really an exciting milestone for the state. Just in general, this morning I was driving around a friend from a small community in Belgium, and he was so impressed by our community. He said it looks like a little village in Europe. It's really, really a beautiful place, and I couldn't agree more. The reason I'm here today is because we are at the end of a big economic slump, and the state of Florida and Winter Park and the United States is now seeing renewed economic vitality and a lot of potential construction. Recently, I attended my neighborhood meeting and heard about a lot of ideas, including the extension of Denningley Road and Denning, which I know are state proposals, the baseball stadium, and a number of other things that you, as our elected leaders, are considering. And I would like to urge you at this time to consider the implementation of a visioning process, which has been very successful in other communities, such as Tavares and Winter Garden. And I know many of you are very familiar with this process, but before we start to bloom again with new construction, I know we're sensitive to how things have happened in the past and the citizens haven't always been 100% positive. So my suggestion today is, please, I wish you would take this time in our development and consider this visioning process, which I think would be time well spent. Measure three times, saw once. And I think it would behoove our great community of Winter Park. Thank you very much for your service. Thank you.
Thank you. Other citizens wishing to speak to us?
Dan Bellows, 411 West New England Avenue, here representing Traditional Neighborhoods, Inc., 501c3. My daughter would normally be here. She's traveling. She's a president. Traditional Neighborhoods was founded in 1996 and raised over $230,000 and brought in Andres Duany for a two-week period and created the Hannibal Square master plan that was presented to the city for them to use in whatever capacity that they have. A entity donated the Grand Chapel Church to Traditional Neighborhoods, and a developer's agreement has been executed with the city for the relocation of the chapel to its current location at New York and Lyman. With that comes a lot of responsibilities and obligations of the not-for-profit of which they are undertaking, and I think the city's going to be pleased with the end result. With that said, there's a $5,200 bill to the power company for the underground transformer that they have set, and approximately $1,000 in connection fees of water and sewer. Three properties were assembled. The old taxi stand was demolished, and then two single-family homes. The city had over $800,000 lien at one time. It was a junkyard, and then a residence. Those have been assembled, so there were impact fee credits, which were greatly appreciated, but there's still this approximately $6,200 amount that I think the various departments would like to get. I would like to ask on behalf of the not-for-profit if the city could contribute that so that they can put money into the structure itself. There's going to be a slate roof, copper gutters, new stucco, paint, landscaping, etc. And if the city could see to removing the chain link fence and that shade cloth around the Blake Yard, we're really going to make it nice, and I think that was supposed to be happening. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Knight, I don't know how requests of citizens or groups are dealt with, but I'm assuming you'll do that. So.
My name is Marilyn Miller. I live at 1631 Diana Drive in the Green Oaks area. We just renamed it. I'm concerned, and so are my fellow neighbors, about the impact on the Lee Road extension to Denning. We have a very quiet neighborhood, lots of young children. Has there been a study done whether if the people from Lee Road go to Denning and they turn left, they'll be going onto Sunnyside? And it's a residential area, and we would think that we would get an awful lot of traffic going through there as a cut through. And I know this was brought up about 6 or 7 years ago, and the study was stopped. And I just want to know, how is this going to happen? Is this a reality, or are we just going around and around with this?
Mr. Knight, I don't know if you want to address the citizen's comment. I'll hold the clock at this point, Michelle.
Sure. The study you're talking about was about 10 years ago, and it wasn't stopped. It was put in the long-range transportation plan, which is coming up now in 2018. So it's been working its way through the funding. It was behind the I-4 improvement. By the state, in the state plan. The reason you're hearing about it now is as a result of that development that is taking place where the Whole Foods is going at the dead end of Lee Road. In the developer's conversation with the DOT, if they wanted access at that traffic light, they had to front the money to put that extension in to Lee Road. So that's why it's coming up now. The developer has provided a traffic study to the city. The city has turned that over to its consultant to review that traffic study. And within the next couple of weeks, we should have a result of that study so we know what are those neighborhood impacts that you're talking about.
Randy, can I ask a follow-up question on that, which also may help clarify? We touched on a little bit before in regards to the working relationship between the city and the state. I mean, push comes to shove. Does the state have the ability to push that road through?
The state has the ability to do that. And we've all seen areas around the state where the state has done a project where a road widening or an extension over the will of that community. And we've also seen where they've backed down.
So I just want to be clear, because there is a lot of communication. There's people out there stopping me and asking that very question. The city, with our relationships, we can certainly work with DOT to try to either, if they're dead set to get it through, the city has little recourse to stop it. But we can certainly work with them to try to either ask them not too nicely or ask them to try to soften it or somehow work with them. Is that fair?
Right.
I just want to be clear, because some people think that the city is driving that through. And that is a state project that the state is working with the developer to try to push through. And we are trying to stay involved in the communications to keep up to date and make sure that we can do the best we can for the community. Is that clear? Does that help?
Well, it helps, but rumors are flying that if the DOT has the funds to do this project, it's going to be done, whether we like it or not. And I don't know how true that is.
As I said, they do own, they have the ability to do it whether or not we like it.
So, I mean...
I'm Rosalie Levy, 850 Juanita Rail.
Can we be clear? I want to make sure she had her 3 minutes. Yes. So you're through? Okay, thank you very much for your time. If you'd start the clock for three, please, Michelle.
In light of what you have said, that the city does have the ability to petition the DOT and get them to change their mind or to do something different, then I see somebody shaking her head. But you did say that. And so I want you to consider the impact on the three neighborhoods that are right there. It's Park North, Park Grove, Green Oaks. Plus, when you have Park Maitland School right there at the corner, those parents line up along North Park Avenue and they come around 1792, and then they let the children off on Magnolia. I don't feel that would be wise. There are many, many children in that area. There's the Park Maitland School, and I hope you will consider that. The one other thing that concerns me is that we have a beautiful city. I don't want to see it made into a traffic thoroughfare with every street going through and around and in it. That I think that would really detract from our city.
I think you have consensus on the commission on that matter.
I agree. Yeah.
By the way, I think Park Maitland is not in the city of Winter Park, if I checked. I think it's in.
It's not, it's actually but it would in be impact. That's next. Correct, but it would be an impact because the parents line up along North Park Avenue. I'm not sure you realize how their traffic into the school was.
Well, if they're lining up on the part that the city of Winter Park controls, they've got a long lineup, I guess.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's a very long...
It's really hard for us to dictate to other cities on that matter specifically, but I hear what you're saying is traffic that occurs on all of our fringes of our limits obviously impacts our city, just like 1792 and 50 impacts our city today, too.
Randy, when do we expect the consultant to get back to us on that study?
The end of next week.
Thank you.
So you're not dealing in rumors. That's great. You're coming and asking us what we can and can't do about that. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, is it so that you can petition the DOT?
We can petition the state as you can petition your local group. We're waiting to see what that is. I mean, for every two citizens that have come and said don't have cut through our traffic, there's people that don't like what's happening at 1792 today. And the backup on Webster and the backup to go to Lee Road and all that. So the joy of why we get the big bucks up here, $3,000 and $2,400 a year, is we get to try to divvy that up amongst everybody's needs. And I would hope, I mean, this is just but one voice. I mean, there are numerous ways to cut through traffic. And I don't know if we, I mean, you know, that traffic study will probably be very telling to us. So, you know, it's very hard to speculate on something when we don't really have all the facts in front of us today.
The difference between Lee Road and 1792 compared to Sunnyside and Juanita Real and Diana Drive, which are small little streets, you have to wait until one car comes one way. I mean, there's no comparison to that.
Well, but I mean, we can do no parking signs. We can do lots of things to slow that.
That's not going to help the traffic. We'll still get a lot of traffic
We're discussing right now something that's very preliminary and very much in the planning stages. I would trust that when we communicate and discuss this and receive this report, it'll be a great time for you all to discuss this matter with us.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We do need yellow sheets from both of you ladies, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Jeffrey Blydenberg, 204 Genius Drive. Apologize not for being here earlier. I understand the ULI technical assistance was approved to move forward. I think the two women that just spoke before me are talking about the tip of the iceberg, about what happens when we don't have a master plan that we've been calling for years as it relates to a great opportunity which the development community has seen, and the opportunity for the commission to take a leadership position is here and now, because in another month or so or whenever, it's going to kind of all slip away. When I say that, there's the development community that has purchased property there. There's Orange County Public Schools. There are all the various stakeholders. There's the state in terms of the DOT part of the project. And it would seem like what could happen is something along the lines of what I wrote to you all last week, which is to bring together the appropriate amount of time, the appropriate number of people led by the commission, because at the end of the day, what's going to happen there will happen with your blessing. It won't happen without your blessing. And that's the leadership is necessary to come from the commission to say, this is what we want to have happen in this area, and to bring the developers together, bring the stakeholders together. And when I say stakeholders, there may be others that we don't even know about yet. Does Rollins need to expand? Does Valencia, would Valencia like to expand? There's a lot of users that may be out there. I see the commission as being in the position to make those kinds of things happen. The ULI tap that is going to happen provides the beginning part of that, but it's not the end. So I would hope that you would be taking that opportunity to see if the Lee Road cut through makes sense. It needs to make sense in a way that does not impact that community. It's not just a matter of putting up some no parking signs. It really has to be done in a way that area is respected. And those things can all be done. It's called planning. We do it all the time. It's time that we did it. Thank you very much.
I would argue with you, Jeffrey, that the ULI tap is planning, but we could debate that all
day
long.
It is. It's just not enough. So. It is. It's a beginning. Yeah. Absolutely. And I applaud you for that, but let's build on that.
I would also argue that the ULI tap on Fairbanks wasn't enough, and that's why the city staff and others are intimately involved with those things. But I think we're agreeing in direction. We may be disagreeing in approach at this point. So. Thank you.
Mary Randall, 1000 South Kentucky Avenue, Winter Park. I wanted to speak also about the traffic issues and cut through. issue. I would like to know if there's anything citizens can do to appeal to the Department of Transportation regarding the cut-through, because I think it's going to create a nightmare for our little town, and I certainly don't want to see that happen. I have to agree with Deirdre McNabb about her visioning, because I don't think we do enough of that in our town, and also with Jeff Leitenberg, I guess, that we don't do enough planning, enough visioning, enough looking ahead to what the impact is going to be of the things that we already have started in these in the areas of Lee Road to Fairbanks on 1792 and on Denning. So I would respectfully request that we do more visioning, do more planning, and put the brakes on when it comes to doing more development until we look at, I mean, look hard at what we're already doing. And I would like to know if there is any way that citizens can have input to the Department of Transportation. Would that be something that we could do directly?
I would defer to city staff. I would probably tell you to go to the FDOT website, and I'm sure they welcome citizen comments on all of their work plans, from the best I know. I don't know a specific process, but...
Right. In this case, I don't believe they would have to do an update of the PD&E, because if the private developer's putting it in, but...
Right. This is on, I mean, so that everyone's clear, this is on the 2018-2019 work plan of FDOT, and there's numerous ways you can have input to that. As I understand, through FDOT auspices, I know they have public hearings just like we have public hearings. So.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Other citizens? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comments. During our open public comment period, Chair would like 15, 10,
okay,
15, 540, and that's not 540 on that. It would be 540.
545 6 on the real clock, right?
Thank you so much. 11F. It is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman?
Mayor, Commission, I've already been told by the mayor that I can't read the whereas. So. He's a party pooper, but
I love it.
I'm just going to read the title then, Mr.
Thank
Mayor.
You, sir, please.
It's an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending certain provisions of Article 4, signed regulations of the City of Winter Park Land Development Code, to provide more specificity and to add clarity. Amending Section 124, Schedule of Violations and Penalties Relating to Snipe Signs, providing for severability, codification, conflicts, and an effective date.
Thank you. Mr. Knight, do you want to kick this one off? I'll just, before I make my comments, because y'all might be here a while with my comments and questions.
Jeff's going to give you a brief presentation. Hopefully brief.
Yeah, what brings us to your agenda is that Jim White, Director of Code Enforcement, asked City Attorney Katie Reichman to help work on some changes to the sign ordinance to help make it more easily enforceable. And Katie was very happy to help in this task, because our sign ordinance is circa 1976, and there are many, many changes that needed to be made to bring it up to date with respect to case law and various things that have happened over the years. That's why you have all those whereases and a lot of the language updates about billboards and off-site signs, etc. What was on the staff's hit list was dealing with new terminology that helped us better enforce the rules on the animated signs, particularly the guys out there jumping around with the buy gold signs and the other things, to make sure that that was more readily enforceable, that they couldn't do that. We also needed to bring some clarity to all the A-frame signs, because in some cases they have to be right up by the building, in some cases they could be out by the street. So we're clarifying that they all need to be within 2 feet of the building. The other never-ending chore for code enforcement is all those little snipe signs that are placed all around the city about junk cars or foreclosures, etc., which is nonstop continual enforcement headache. They've been declared abandoned property, so if I'm out jogging and I pull them out of locations and I'm not getting arrested by taking private property, that there's a provision for all of us to help in that enforcement task. We also had no code provisions about free expression signs. If somebody wanted to stand there with Save the Whales, we didn't have anything that addressed the fact that signage is permitted in terms of free expression of our opinions and our rights. There also are a couple of changes to the election signs because the case law has sort of frowned on limitations and restrictions on election signage. In particular, they frowned seriously on the limitation on how far ahead of an election that you can put out signs. We had 45 days. It's really not legal. So that has come out of the code. They also frown on the number of signs, but we felt that, despite the city attorney's advice, there needed to be some limit. That's why you have the limit of four per property, and we've kept the size the same as they are. Two other little permissive things that came from the staff. We have been dealing with variances for churches, not able to do their church sign and their little reader board within the 18 square feet. So we're increasing that to 24 square feet. And also we have the anomaly of Lee Road, four-lane arterial highway, most of it zoned office, most of it limited to 36 square feet for all signs, whereas on the other commercial roads you get 50 to 100 square feet. So we are changing the size there to be more permissive, up to the 50 square feet, but only for the bigger properties. P&Z made that change. You got to at least be over 100 feet, so those few house conversions wouldn't necessarily get the extra square footage. So that's basically the high points of what's in these revisions to the sign code that were reviewed by P&Z in detail at a work session and then recommended for adoption at their last public hearing.
Mr. Mayor, I was kidding earlier about the wares, but I will say...
And I was taking it.
I understand. But actually, when you go through the warehouses, it's really...
No, it was very helpful.
It actually does help understand.
It was very helpful.
It shows what we're trying to... what the city's trying to accomplish. And I love the introduction because it shows that the only common theme really in this ordinance is that it has to do with signs. So we're trying to capture a lot of different objectives in this ordinance. Some of them come from our office, of course, trying to, you know, a lot of laws come out from the federal courts since our current code was constructed regarding signs. And, of course, there's some changes that have been as far as enforcement, that staff and code enforcement and all of the people that are out there trying to enforce it have learned, and we're trying to address in this. So that's my introduction, Mayor. Thank you.
So I have a lot of questions. Do you want me to begin, or would you all like to go with this?
Finally, you probably have some of ours as well.
Yeah, I have five.
So, Jeff, let me begin by saying I don't know if this has gone too far or not far enough. I'll just begin by saying that. So if I look and take the collective signs that we have in Winter Park in all forms into my being and just close my eyes and see all the signs in Winter Park from all the roads I drive down. I'm just speaking as a citizen. I'm not speaking as a mayor. It doesn't feel like we have an ordinance. It feels like we've got the term mishmash would come to mind. And it also feels, and this is no intent against our code enforcement people, but it also doesn't feel like we enforce much. And that's not... I know we enforce out the wazoo, so that's not meant as any critical term. I understand the need to regulate, improve this since 1976. I'm very supportive of those different types of things, and frankly, the whereases were very, very helpful. But the uniformity of our signs, so I'm comparing and contrasting to. Bill has said Boca Raton has
Port Orange
kind of,
too.
Kind
Port
of
Orange.
Port Orange,
Lake Mary.
Port Orange, that would be a good example. Thousand Oaks came to my mind, a city where monument signs are permitted. You don't see much of anything else. It feels like there's much less signage, which ultimately seems to me to be something that would be worthy And whatever's gotten us to where we're at today, it just feels like a morass. So that's my question as I look at this ordinance before I go into my specific questions is, I don't know that it's done enough. And that would be something that ultimately would probably require a lot of artistic design and a lot of people saying, you know, putting time and thinking into. I know how much time and thinking it took at least members of this commission, a few of them, and long before the four of them were on it, to come up with the signs that we just put for City of Winter Park directional signs, and that was a 3 or 4 year process. So part of me tells me that probably makes me want to enact a lot of what's here initially, and then maybe go forward with something that seems to me much more consistent. So I guess my first question is, and it's to Bill. Bill, do most cities, I know the whereas has had our land development code and the comprehensive plan, is that where most cities tag their sign ordinance into?
In your land development code.
Yeah. So that's helpful to know that. Let me ask it this way. Where's good taste regulated, if it is? So in other words, could you have pornographic signs and or obscene signs in our city, and is that covered in our ordinance anywhere?
It is, and the general consideration is aesthetics. That's the word that you'll find in all the lawsuits, is that one of the factors that permits us to regulate speech, because that's what we're doing, signs contain speech, is that there's a countervailing public interest in aesthetics. And one subset of that is that local governments have the right to prohibit certain types of speech that are deemed to be and agreed to be offensive.
So that would be obvious in our sign ordinance today. The whole, and this is where I guess I don't know, I'm going to use a couple examples that I've seen. You know, I drove by the Bank of Commerce routinely right on the corner of Lee Road and, pardon me, 1792 and Orange. And I think last year they were having a sale for mortgage rates. And it was a much bigger sign. Is that something that somebody probably got permission for, or we don't know? I wouldn't even want to ask you to do that. But if I'm having a sale, in this case it was a bank interested in getting mortgages, what part of our sign ordinance, I guess, does that fall under?
Well, those are banners, and typically they don't ask for permits or permission. They just put them up, and code enforcement has to enforce the code because we don't allow banners.
So then there was another one that recognized, albeit probably a very worthy thing, Orlando City Soccer's championship on the same property. So that was probably a similar banner that more than likely wasn't asked for, but we just put them up.
And we exercise, obviously, discretion about different things that have some public service value to them. I think from my perspective, the biggest reason why it doesn't appear like we have a sign ordinance that's accomplishing anything is because, not because of the permanent signs, the pole signs, or the wall signs, it's the mishmash of the A-frame signs, some of them very professionally done, some of them just crude and just letters of all different sizes and colors in all different locations. I mean, I think the single most important thing we could do, if we wanted to, the businesses will complain, is get rid of all those A-frame portable signs. They're a constant headache for enforcement. But, you know, what we hear from businesses, it's not their products, it's not their prices, it's not their service. The reason why they aren't doing the business they want is it's their signs. So it's very frustrating in enforcing this.
Jeff, I thought we only allowed them to do that during the period of the bad economy.
That's when it started. That's when we made the change
to
the code.
Clear to say if we go back.
Yeah, but now there's an entitlement to them if you're a business owner. So it's very difficult to take something away when you've...
Even when we said it was temporary going in, and we did.
Just my 2 cents.
So I'll close my catharsis by saying, you know, I'm disturbed that signs probably equate to, you know, that Lee Road has a special sign district that others do and don't. I'd love to get to see some more city uniformity personally. I can't support the four minimum for for elections, and that's not as an elected official, but I don't want to face a citizen who said I want to vote for a judge, the president, the state senator, a city commissioner, and no on Amendment 4. And I don't want to be in a position to say, well, pick which of those four you want to support, and you want to have five, that's not mine. I think neighbors will enforce that probably as well as anybody professionally. Neighborly, and you'll get 95% or 98% compliance that way. If somebody wants to cover their lawn with 50,000 campaign signs from 50,000 people running that you could vote for in Winter Park, and maybe it should be Winter Park ballots. Is that something we could do, Bill, if it appears on a Winter Park ballot, meaning not City of Winter Park, but anything that you could vote for?
Recommend against that, Mayor.
So I could put up a Vote Bill de Blasio sign on my lawn for New York City, and
yeah,
people would
be. You want to stay away from any type of specific content regulation.
But you all voted, or you all allowed at least four to come through, so you must be in favor of some.
Well, the current code is two. Right?
The current code's two. Advice was to have none, and we thought from zero to unlimited.
So, I mean, I appreciate Bill's point, but if Bill signed off on this ordinance at this point, I guess there's things in this ordinance he doesn't agree with, so I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
Well, there were definitely discussions. Jeff indicated that there were discussions between our office and staff about some of the realities of their objectives, their enforcement objectives, and some of the concerns that we had about whether we'd be able to defend those and defend these limitations. And this one that you're raising, Mayor, is a specific example where, you know, we didn't see completely odd on. I mean, that's
so
fair.
So free expression is one thing, and if somebody is for or against something, you know, I'm very hesitant to attempt to legislate that in any way, shape, or form. That's part of our, in my opinion, constitutional rights.
Well,
I don't know that every business in every strip mall has to have a sign, though. I mean, I don't know if that's something that comes down to zoning or if that's a constitutional right personally. And it gets to the place where, in my opinion, the city is overrun with signs.
We are overrun.
That's why I'm arguing for something even stronger.
If I could.
With careful public input, with careful business community input, with careful developer input, et cetera.
And what you're concerned about, your concerns and your objectives can be done. But it's got to be content neutral. So we're going to need. So what we would bring back to you, which this does not, would we make signs fewer, signs smaller, change the location so they don't jump out when you're driving along or you're walking along. But we wouldn't be saying that just applies to businesses. We wouldn't be saying that just applies to not-for-profits. It would be even across the board.
So before I would
oversimplifying, but that's the gist.
Before I would even recommend that, I would like to listen to broad constituents. And I'm just looking at the audience today, and God bless all of you, but there's not a broad constituency being represented. There are several citizens being represented, but this would be one of those where, you know, I would love a proactive process by which we could get various people to weigh in on. So, you know, this specific ordinance, I guess I'm almost ready to say it hasn't gone far enough, but I don't know what that is, and it may take 50 years to get it where we want it.
Let me make one more comment, Mayor. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The examples that we spoke about at the beginning of this discussion, I think if you go and you talk to the people that live in those communities, they were lucky because they got their sign regulations in early,
long time,
early on in their development process. They did get the horse in front of the cart. You know, we're lucky to have a city that's been here a while, with some major thoroughfares that have been here a while, the people out doing business successfully for a while, and my experience is that when you try to go back and change status quo, there is going to be some screening.
And if we tried, I can't say that I would want to go back and take everybody's signs out. That wouldn't be an effort that there's enough lawyer bills in the city or enough money to defend. But certainly going forward, I think that things could be done if we chose to do that. And people may like it so much that they may personally, as they redo signs, say, you know what, this is a much better approach. I've been cathartic enough. Commissioner Mackin.
Mayor, I agree with you. I kept looking for the cliff notes in here and realized that the whereases were the cliff notes. And it just, to me, magnified the extent of the problem that we're facing. And I view this ordinance as the finger in the dike, that it's allowing us to, in this moment of time, address concerns that staff is brought forward of how we can enforce what we have. I don't believe what we have is where we want to be. To council's point, it's going to be like billboards in that it's going to take years and years and years and years as signs wear out and have to be replaced, and then you have a city code in place that says, you know, when you come back to replace this sign, it can only be this or that or something else. So where we want to be is years down the road. And this to me is okay saying that, yes, I mean, I went through all the whereases and my head was, you know, didn't realize we needed that many, but we do. And I totally agree. We have signs everywhere. And I would certainly like to see something much, much stronger. I do totally agree. I mean, this is going to be something that we're going to have to work with the entire community, not just the business community or the residential community or anything else, and say, where is the point that we want to wind up with this? And that's going to take some time. But in the interim, this to me hopefully allows staff and our enforcement group to do what they have to do to at least stem the tide at the moment, because it's not, I see snipe signs, they're like mushrooms. I mean, they're there one day, they're gone the next, and there's a whole other batch up and down even the small streets that I drive, not the main thoroughfares. So it's...
And Commissioner Mackin, to your point, that's what I'm saying, it doesn't do enough. Maybe it does just the right amount to at least get the, you know, certainly something that from 1976, there's been a lot of case law and there's been a lot of things that need to get updated. And maybe if this is the technical amendments or something, one might could argue that this is a step in the right direction. You know, part of me wants to table it until I hear broader groups of people. Part of me is ready to move it as technical amendments and then start some sort of a process that lets us, and I don't know where that process would be. I mean, it need to come from, you know, staff and others working with the people that care about signs, which is almost everybody in our community, and say, is there a way? And then obviously Bill, the attorney, and everybody's going to have to tell us how we could get from point A to point B. It may take 50 years.
It's going to take
I mean,
time.
It took us three to get the beautiful blue signs up, and that was working with
FDOT
and others.
That was something everybody was on board with, and it still took that long. So it was,
I haven't heard anybody say they're too big or too blue or too in the wrong place or whatever.
Don't.
So,
too many.
You know, I'm going to move the ordinance on first reading as presented, and then I'm going to move an amendment. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Commissioner Cooper, then I'm going to make an amendment.
The biggest problem that I saw as I went through here is I do agree with you that we have too many signs and too much variation. I would really like to see us pursue monument signs, nice clean monument signs as we move forward, and I think we could draw the line and new development would maybe bring in those nice new monument signs. And the ones I saw online were quite lovely, and you really could still see the businesses. But the other problem that I had as I went through this, so many places we are increasing the size of all the signs that we currently allow. I mean, I printed out all of the pages where the signs are getting bigger, and that's not insignificant. Places we used to allow 18 square foot, now we're allowing 24. Where we used to allow 36, now we're allowing.
Can you show us an example?
Yes, I'd be happy
to.
I would be happy to do
so
that.
So we can look at it in the bottom of it.
The first one is on page 5 under 58124, item 3. It says for non-residential units, and I don't want to read all of these to you, but one identification sign, one bulletin board sign for each developed parcel, not exceeding a total of
18 square feet for all signs. Now it says 24.
And that's for
right
churches.
Right down below that.
That's the church.
That's really the church provision to let them do.
But I'm just saying, every one of these is increasing. That we're all sitting here saying we got sign clutter. We have sign pollution in this town. There's no doubt about it. And every one of these is increasing the size of signs. If you go down below, and I understand the reason for it, Jeff, but the office signs are going from 36 square to 50 square.
On Lee Road.
That's on page.
But that's just Lee Road.
Five. If you go, this is all the office district.
No, it's just Lee Road.
Just Lee Road.
Under all, okay, so Lee Road signs are getting larger.
So then, God signs are getting bigger.
Yes.
And Lee Road signs.
Signs are getting bigger. understand it's not that cool, any of these are bad and there's not a good excuse. The fact is we're saying we have too much sign pollution and we're increasing the size of every, for good reasons, but unnecessary, I think. A one free expression sign, you're going to allow a 4-foot square up to as high as 6 feet tall.
Now where are we?
We're on page 8,
item G. And I don't think you can do much about that.
Well, we can make it no bigger than 2 square foot, which is what our expression signs used to be. I mean, we used to have, when you were having a political expression, when you put your candidate out there, I don't think you can exceed 2 square feet. Am I right about that? Close enough?
That's correct.
So I'm not sure why we would want to allow someone to talk about whales at 4 square feet or abortion at 4 square feet. Or saving the aquifer at 4 square feet. I don't know why we'd want to do that. And
4 square feet is a real estate sign, just for frame of reference.
But we have 2 frames of reference. You know, we have a 2-foot and we have a 4-foot. And the point is, we're making all the signs bigger, and why would we do that if we think they're too big already? And then I really got a kick out of page 15, item E1. Because you have to realize, I just did not run for office, which means my attic is full of signs, political signs that say, we elect Carolyn Cooper. And according to this, I could put them out in the street tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think that's ridiculous. I think we need to hold on to that 45 days.
Well, you're not a candidate, so you really can't do that.
I could still put it out there, because eventually I will run for office, and there's nothing here that says I can't. We took it away. We used to say 45 days, and now it hasn't. But so all I'm
saying is... You technically can't say re-elect because the state law would not permit you to say that.
This ordinance...
You could say we like Carolyn Cooper.
Well, at some point...
We hate Carolyn Cooper, but you can't say re-elect unless you're in an active campaign.
Mayor, the question is, we used to say we couldn't do that until 45 days before an election. Now we're taking that out. So how far before an election can you do it?
Why did we take
it? Well, I'm assuming when you're a candidate.
That's us.
Okay.
And what happened is you had people who were running for office that challenged regulations, just like we have on the books right now, that limited the amount of time before an election. And they lost. And the cities lost. And the federal courts ruled that that was an inappropriate infringement on speech.
But you have to be a candidate. Let's be clear. You can't say I'm thinking of running for something in the future.
That's different. Yes, sir. I'm not going to that.
No, but I mean, to her point is from the day of qualifying that you qualified, you're now a candidate. In theory, you could put signs out.
Yeah,
we used to have
a
go date in Winter Park.
So even if you took out the limitation, if someone put up a sign,
so that has a limit.
But I don't think she can put out a re-elect sign for 3 years from now, because she's not a candidate.
But
I hear your point.
Make sure there was some
follow
boundary around that.
I follow you.
And then...
Except that's the one, if I may interrupt, that's the one that seems to be the most difficult one to put a boundary upon.
Because of the lawsuits.
Well, not just because of the lawsuits, but because we're ultimately stopping people's freedom of speech. And so people's freedom of speech includes the right to be able to say, I really like you, or I really don't like you, vote for me or don't vote for me.
Mr. Mayor,
I'm sorry, I wasn't quite finished yet, because there were a few things I wanted to make sure we're taking care of being forward looking. And one of them is building wraps. I go to lots of cities now where I see buildings wrapped with signs. I don't know if we've done anything here to be in the front instead of behind that one. I see trailers parked out here on Park Avenue with signs on them. I see scooters pulling little trailers that have signs on them. the temporary sandwich boards, they were supposed to be temporary. Let's go back and look at the minutes. I think the economy has improved. I think they're getting out of hand. So where I'm at is this ordinance does some great things. I love the meat. I love the whereas. But I think we've gone, I think we're making signs bigger instead of getting rid of them. And my last thing that I wasn't sure needed to be in this ordinance was 58.141, where it says content neutrality. That sounds like legal direction I would expect you to give the city manager or you to give me. And I'm not sure you need to stick it in an ordinance and call everybody's attention to it. And if you do, you do, and I get it. But I just want to tell
right.
you, sometimes people don't even think of doing things until you mention it in something that they go to read.
Let me give this disclaimer. First of all, since my wife was the one that created this, do not ask me in a public forum to say that she's wrong. Please don't ask me to do that.
Okay. No, I'm just saying that when you go to rethink this, because I hope every day will rethink this. That's really good advice. Though. I guess you've
but,
said
that. I'm sorry, but you know, to be perfectly serious, let me make this observation. This first reading that we're considering of this ordinance is covering a lot of territory.
It is.
And it's been my experience doing this for a long time that we could spend an hour talking about one example.
Yeah.
And this contains tens, 20s, 30, almost 100 changes to your sign code. And there was a good reason for every one of them.
Sure.
And every one of them can be discussed. So, your call, that I've seen some of our other cities that have workshops. You know, they have one of our cities just is in the middle of the same process. And they've had, they've sent out invitations to all the business owners and had public forums for that. Again, I'm not trying to step on your toes, but I mean this. If
this
you know, you well,
okay.
Commissioner, you've mentioned a lot of different examples, and I can't, you know, there's we can have a discussion about each one, and I'm happy to tonight.
And no, that's why I feel the same. I feel what you're saying. That's why I don't know to treat this as a very complex and comprehensive technical change. I don't think, with the exception of what we're doing with the elections, that I feel, I mean, if you're telling us, and Chief White as our code enforcement officer is telling us, we need to get things in place because it's just too hard to enforce and we need to get some changes, I think I can support the changes that are being, you know, referenced here. I don't know that a month later will make it any easier for me to make these changes or not. I just don't know that this does what I ultimately would like to see
it does.
As a vote with signs.
It does, and I'm going to say that right now. What it does, it makes it more enforceable from what you have on the books. That's number one. Number two, it addresses some of the actual on-the-ground practical problems that staff is having in enforcing the code.
Which I want to, you know, give them the authority they need to be able to do their jobs well, too.
What I would like
Commissioner
to do
Larry.
Is take this as homework for possibly a work session, because I think there is a lot more to discuss, and I think that we all went through this, maybe brought our ideas to a table in a work session. We could have a little better discussion, a little bit more, and be prepared to really dig into this rather than at this time. So what I'd like to do is move to table.
Second.
The motion to take table is debated and not debated and voted on. Clerk, will read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes.
Can we schedule one of those then?
Sure.
Happy to. No, I just.
I know
we've got lots going on in the next couple of weeks.
I know, and I hate to do that because it works.
Send the city manager if they could pull us and get that.
Yeah, maybe it's in before one of our next commission meetings sometime down the road. But anyways, I agree.
I will say this, I would like some visual cues for the next time we sit together with this, so we may need to have rulers and measures and
without getting any specific
pictures and examples and things that could be very helpful, at least I think to ultimately make the decisions we need to make. Go ahead, Bill.
I'm sorry. This is a topic near and dear to our hearts, so one of the things that our office felt that for this city, for your citizens, that we need to make sure we get in our code is electronic signs and dealing with. Now you get new technology out there, and when you have a code that's 15 years old, there's just no way you're going to be able to have staff give staff the ability to manage that type of these requests.
So we can still discuss this, even though we moved to table the actual action. If there are certain items of this that I would consider legally pressing that we need to get updated, I, for one, would like to see those addressed. Now, if you think all of them are legally pressing, then we probably have a different discussion.
Well, a lot of the changes came from our office.
But if, but as you identified, there's dozens, if not hundreds, of changes here.
Right.
If for some reason over the next month or 2 months or however long it's going to take us to make a decision, if that's putting it into some legal jeopardy, or if this could be greatly improve our city's process, then I mean, I think we ought to expedite, I guess would be the word I would use, not push, but expedite through a decision on the issues that truly are legal. I'm not sure all of these are legal.
No, they're not.
Some of them
not
are, or might be enforcement, and some of these may be even aesthetics, potentially. And then I guess I would like to, when we do have that work session, have some concept, both with legal support along with staff recommendation, on what kind of a process have other communities gone through. And you mentioned some of them did it when they were an infancy bill, and some of them have done it later.
Well, some are in newer cities.
And I'm sitting here wondering if we could ever agree to what those might be. But you know, I think collectively there's at least two voices that are saying what we have today in signage is too much. At least I heard Carolyn and I agreeing on that. So that we wish there was a way to get that kind of
this does not
is not the right word, but
this ordinance does not contain that, because staff in our office was not, we were not going to
be
presumptuous about policy changes.
Not
at all.
Nor should you. And I also don't know if it's better, and I would, you know, seek advice from my fellow commissioners as well as Mr. Knight. I don't know if it's better to take a chunk at a time and fix it till we get it right. I don't know if that's a better way.
If I could offer a couple opinions,
please,
from the enforcement perspective, since since I was kind of labeled at the beginning of this as putting Pandora's box up here and getting ready to open it up. What we were challenged with was, you know, see two perspectives that you're talking about. One is the legal side of it, and one's the aesthetic side of it, and the architectural view of the signs. And I will tell you right now, before a year ago, November, I really didn't pay much attention to signs. They just were not on my agenda, unless they were on fire. I really didn't have a problem with it. But I will tell you, since then, and since Randy called me into his office and we discussed code enforcement and said, snipe signs are a big deal, I have sought counseling, because snipe signs, I cannot drive anywhere without trying to look at issues of signs. And I will tell you, we have taken what we currently have and meeting with legal and said, and we have stretched it probably as far as we possibly can. We have taken cases to the code board that we won, but forced us to add language in here that said, let's not let this happen again. And if I were to, I could cite 50 examples right now, and you all would go, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. I'll just give you a couple. You remember we used to have signs on every bench that was at a bus stop?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gave them permission to do those. They're gone. We don't know where they came from. We don't know who's putting them up. We don't know. Lynx didn't know. Nobody. They're gone. We might be the only city in Central Florida that they're gone in. There's signs that deal, we mentioned the electronic signs. If you notice, a lot of our gas stations, the ones that we have, they were changing numbers. We were the only ones where they were still changing numbers till Wawa came along. Had to change for that. That's now covered in this. So there's the legal side of where, oh, the animated signs. People out there, it wasn't consistent where we were making them remove snipe signs, meaning the ones that you stick in the ground with the little wires and tack them to the poles. But somebody could sit out there and spin a sign and not stick it in the ground. Now, that's just not consistent. So the officers would go out and try and get the people who were, you know, okay, well, you can't, you know, we were stretching it to go, you can't stand in the right of way, but you can do it over here, and you can't. So there were a lot of things that were inconsistent that we were just enforcing, and we still will. So there's not anything, we don't have any pending cases, so your tabling is, well, I kind of figured this is what was going to happen. We would get your real feeling on where you wanted to go with this. So the legal side, we don't have any pending cases where we need a decision or it's going to change anything. There's nothing that we really can't do at this point, but we do want to know where you want us to go. Things like the A-frame signs, things like the you know, the all the architectural aesthetic and all those types, and the volume, excellent points, the volume of signs, certainly we're not interested. We'll do whatever you like us to do. I don't have a dog in that hunt. If you want them this size, that's fine. If you
so I don't know if the commission wants to have a marathon session, work and otherwise, and do that, or if and I'm not going to tell you how to process this, but, you know, you could bring an ordinance that modified the snipe to us, as an example, and we could act on that, and then you could bring an ordinance. I mean, we could do this. It's going to take us probably several months to get it done anyway. You could bring us an issue at a time that we could, or an issue or two at a time that might be able to be a bit more manageable at this point. The redo of an ordinance since 1976 isn't probably going to happen in one setting. So.
I don't think there really are more than about 15 things that we need to talk about. I think a workshop, we could probably right. do this with visuals.
If you could leave the legal, just the legal issues is probably the thing that we're most concerned about. And just and like Mr. Reisman said, when we sat and talked with Katie about, you know, originally we had some conflicts with a couple of cases. And we're going like, why can't we do this? Well, your sign ordinance really doesn't lay down. Oh, by the way, the sign ordinance is really wrong here. And by the way, it's really not consistent here. So that's where the box got opened up. And so
what I was hoping we could do was kind of take this whole thing, again, this homework, sit down during a work session. Let's cover all of them. If we start getting too in-depth on one of them, direct staff to say, you know, you've kind of heard what we're saying, then move on to the ones we can address and maybe bring those back to the next commission meeting, address those five, get those taken care of, and then the other ones can come. But rather than get bogged down on every little item at the work session, let's try to get through it.
I don't think we will get bogged down.
No, I totally agree. So the ones that we're kind of clear on where we're going, well, let's bring those back right away. We can institute those, and the ones that take a little bit longer, let's give direction to staff and city attorney come back.
But I'll listen to the optimism of the commission. I don't share your optimism.
If we were optimistic.
I certainly in this case am an optimistic person in general, and I will.
Mr. Mayor,
I think once we start talking about A-frame signs or whatever, we'll be at this for a long time. I'm going to see, allow Commissioner Sprinkle to speak, and then I'll go to you, Bill. Is that all right?
I just simply wanted to say, I think there's more here that we can get done in one setting than we are saying, but A-frame signs are one of those things that we're going to have a lot of other people come in and talk to us about, too. So we're not going to get all this done, but let's do one workshop. Let's schedule it. You've done a great job here. I mean, you really have, because you've got
a great start,
but I do think there will be some things. The other thing that I would caution us about is, as a city, if we're going to put these rules and rights on everybody else, we have to put them on ourselves. And so that speaks to us, too, when it comes to the trailer signs that are blinking and all of that, because those are out there also. So we just have to be real aware that we want to change the makeup and not have all these signs. And I believe I've been saying that for how long up here, guys? You know that. So it's we definitely need to look at the signs. They are not making our city better.
Mr. Reisman?
Yeah, I just want to make one distinction, Mayor, and I think it goes to the point that I'm hearing all of you all make. What you have in front of you is trying to make it more your current sign code better, more enforceable, more specific, more legal. What it does not do is change your policy. So at a workshop, Mayor, I would agree. Some of these we're going to be able to get through because we're not really changing the wish list. We're making the current situation clearer and better for staff and for us. Where you will, I predict, bog down is where you start changing your regulations as far as pole signs to monument signs, no A-frame signs, those types of things. That's when it's going to start really coming out.
Okay, that concludes our reports. Let's go to our city commission reports. Commissioner Leary?
I was just going to recognize our mayor being inducted into the UCF Business Hall of Fame.
Thank you. We're proud of my alma mater. Thank you very much.
It was a great honor. So you should
thank you.
And that is it.
Well, and he was named for, you know, Ken Bradley Day in Orlando. We should at least have one in Winter Park. Come on, people.
Every day feels that way for me. So.
I have a few other things. We have the big chili thing coming up on Wednesday night, so if you haven't gotten your chili tickets yet, you'll want to go over there. We had Lieutenant Nad. Maybe somebody else will speak to that, because there were three of us there, and it was a wonderful, wonderful event. I also wanted to mention that we've had a bunch of people up here tonight talking about visioning and talking about all these different things that we do and how we put everything together. And I'm not sure when our next plan is for our long-term planning. And I think some of that is because we haven't maybe made everybody aware of what we've been doing. And maybe we haven't made it available for people. So I want us to do what we can when we talk about a long-term planning, that what we're doing and what we know, sometimes the public doesn't know what we know. So I'm not sure how we do that. I'm not sure when we, you know, schedule our next strategic planning. But I think that's part of where we are, is that some people don't know everything we've done in that process and how that needs to fit together with everything else we're doing. So that's just... there's no good answer to it, even though we may know we're doing some of that. The people don't know it, so it's not being done.
Thank you. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Commissioner Cooper?
I'm thrilled that we're tackling signs. When you go home to your wife, make sure she understands that we're all very appreciative. And I do, the legal aspects of it are important, but I just think in general, we need to look at how we can move forward. And I think... the monument signs is certainly one thing to think about, and that I see a lot of nice shopping centers that have monument signs as opposed to lots of different signs where we can. I don't know about that 100-foot. That's not very big. When we talked about increasing signs for a 100-foot lot, that's not very big. But anyway, I'm glad we're tackling signs. That's real important. And also, I just keep coming back to, and Sarah, it's kind of what you're talking about, except that I want people to have a feeling that they're having some input. And I think what's happened is, over the years, we used to, for many years in a row, we sent resident surveys into people's homes. And I admit that it wasn't easy. You know, sometimes getting the questions just right wasn't always easy. But the fact is, people felt like they had an opportunity to participate. And I think that's the hardest thing. And I asked during the budget, and I'm going to keep bugging, because that's on my list of things that I think is important, and that is an opportunity for residents to fill out surveys and talk about how they feel about things. So to me, that's something I'd like for you all to think about more, because that's something I really do think would help people feel better about their level of participation. And we did have a wonderful week with Lieutenant Nad, especially my son went to school with him, so that was very nice to see. He's on his way to becoming President of the United States. That's what he always wanted to do, and he's making all the right moves to do that. So it was a real good day for us. And that's all I have.
Commissioner Mackin.
That was a special, special event. I appreciate the Lieutenant's comments that he was there representing so many other people. Mm-hmm. And he's a... You couldn't ask for a better representative of this city or this country.
He's
a remarkable individual. Two quickies. We have a St. Patrick's Day parade on Sunday. And my fellow commissioners, I don't know if we're commissioning or we're doing what. I'm going to be there with green on, and I don't know if we're...
What are we doing? Because we don't have vehicles this year, so we have to decide whether we all individually go get cars or whether we want to... Okay. Are we going to do something together, Randy? Do you have?
We're not involved.
Do you already have plans?
I'm walking. I'm just curious. Are we?
We got a letter and it says show up.
I'm going to show up. I didn't know if we were all showing up together and walking as a group, or we're just.
No, that's a very good point. We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, and I'm fine doing anything. I'm going to walk. I'm going to bring my.
Are we going to have our little banner that we've had in years past? Do you still have that says Winter Park City?
Christmas. I don't know if we've had one for...
Oh, it has Christmas decorations on it?
Yeah. Let's just be realistic here. Even when we try to walk together, we
don't... We're always line up all.
I think Judge Sprinkle finished about an hour after us.
Yeah. He's still on the parade.
That's because he stopped at Luma.
He was having a great time.
He was having a great time.
We can start out together. I'm just not promising we're going to end together.
We'll all be there.
We'll see you all on Sunday.
Green on Sunday. The other one I had, and this has always been one of my things, and I'm going to ask again. We're going to cut the ribbon on Monday at the station.
Correct.
And I'd like you all just to, when we do that, take a look at what we've built and then look across the tracks and see where we have our storage shed for Central Park and just say, is that really where we want to have it in proximity to the rest of what's going on?
I thought we did something about that.
Well,
we never did.
We put the door on the other side, but it's kind of like, yeah, the half moon is facing one way as opposed to the other.
Is it something?
I just like all of you, when you're there, if you just take a second, kind of glance over and say, is that...
Can landscaping fix it, Tom, or does it...
Some things even landscaping can't fix. I'm a landscape architect, so it's...
The answer is no.
I just ask you to take a look and consider it.
The staff's working up a price for me to see moving that. It's not a storage shed as much as it's an irrigation...
Yeah, there's other things
going
on there.
The pumps and all that's in there, so it's more complicated to move than just something we've got rakes and brooms.
Appreciate that, but it's... Someone just like to consider
it.
It's still ugly.
It was beat with the ugly stick, and I don't think it's going to recover.
How long has it been there? Because I don't want to tear it down.
It may have a guess.
It could be 50 years. We could be in trouble here, guys. That's all I had, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Randy, this may not be any of our business, but since we spend $70,000 a year or more than 50% of our funding, I am concerned about it. The Historical Society, I know, has used the Corporate Square offices gratis for storage, and if that's about to get demoed, there are antiquities of our city that are in their possession that I guess as a steward of the antiquities, even if they're not mine, I'm concerned about. I wonder if you could inquire on our behalf to the Historical Society as to what their plans are. At one point when they were discussing with us the need for museum space and others, they also discussed with us the potential need for storage space. I don't know what we would be able to or not able to offer them. It seems to me like if the library has ways to store things, that maybe we might even encourage single storage versus multiple storage. But like I said, I don't know that that's ours to worry about. But if it got knocked down and there was no place to go, somebody would ask us why you spent $70,000 and didn't know about it. So, yes. This coming Sunday is a big day in our city, our St. Patrick's Day parade. And then Monday is the opening of our Amtrak station. So I look forward to seeing those of you who voted for the station to be there, and those of you who don't, have a great day. Anything else? Have a wonderful evening. We sit adjourned.